It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 22nd day of March, 2022, Titanic Tuesday, and mercy sakes alive, there is nothing like a confirmation hearing to bring out the Titanic right-wing intellect. Oh my God, we will have plenty of time for that. Hi, I'm Robin, and if you should happen to wander by the head on.live chat room, you've got an opportunity to join the Merry Wacky's any real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that happens in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round, and whenever it is that you choose to listen, if you listen to the podcast. At present, in said chat room, are early arrivers Stock and Larry, Squeaky, and Anatole, and, well, everybody's capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave and also Mower of Man Cave Park. Yes. It is World Freshwater Day. Thanks for letting me know that. Stock and Larry, appreciate it. But more than anything else, it's confirmation hearing day, and the confirmation hearings are still taking place. I've got them running live now, because eventually we will get to young, wet-behind-the-ears insurrectionist Josh Hawley, but in particular, I confess, I mean, it's like watching a slow moving train wreck, but I confess I'm waiting for Marsha, goodness, Blackburn, and the circus hour. It's okay. I mean, there has to be some entertainment value here somewhere. I've already sat through Ted Raphaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, who has an absolutely unhealthy fixation on children's literature. I don't know if I would want... He was... In his questioning today, he was... He really did a deep dive on the sentencing of child porn convicts. Kind of makes me wonder about his hard drive. But never mind, that's just me wondering things. I had a couple of great notes earlier in the day. Right now, Judge Jackson is being questioned by Senator Richard Blumenthal, one of Darlene in Connecticut's senators. But I do have got it. I've got it going, and I've got it on mute. But way early today, not way early. I mean, well, it was 9:41 a.m. when Matt sent this from San Francisco. Subject line, hearings. Can we just make Sheldon Whitehouse the attorney general? And Sheldon Whitehouse was, as he always is, encyclopedic. That man comes to a hearing ready. You can see why he was a good prosecutor. Matt continues and says, I find it difficult to watch the hearing simply because the Republicans have once again ruined another institution. The only argument that made sense regarding the filibuster for me was the 60 votes needed for a Supreme Court nominee. Since Mitch blew that up, it's just become a cruel joke on democracy. I could not agree more, Matt. If you can't win an election, cheat. If you can't get your horrible ideas instituted through legislation, at least block anything that advances democracy or fairness by enacting the filibuster. Then pack the court so you can get your way via the Supreme Court. Republicans suck. Signed, Matt, in San Francisco. And I would like to associate myself with Matt in San Francisco's remarks in toto. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program, of course, is no different. And so that means we say thanks this day to our 22nd day of the month subscribers. What that means is we say thank you to David in San Diego and to Colin. Thank you, Colin. Thank you to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now more happily ensconced in the greater San Diego area. Thank you both, or all three, rather, for being partial sponsors of the program. The fundraising goal is down to $980. And hopefully we will we'll take a bite out of that this evening. And, of course, we've got political animals. Joey writes, what? No cowbell for Joey 2 the kangaroo with her equality effort? Well, I withheld that, Joey, because it's, I think you and Giraffe and Junior are a bad influence on her. She's a nice little kangaroo. Robin, you left that poor little kangaroo in tears as that was her first real effort for a cowbell. Oh, great. Make me feel bad. She works so hard as only one of the few political kangaroos willing to hop on problems. Oh, all right. Here. There. There's a mercy cowbell for hop on problems. Joey 2 the kangaroo is truly an outlier from the outback. Oh, now here comes Jeffrey. Yes, Robin, you will rue the day. It's going to be one of those, isn't it? Rue the day. Oh, tired llama. It's like bowling in here. I got a bunch of stuff. But it. Okay. The bottom line is I keep my perfume back here, and I keep knocking my perfume bottles off when I go for the cowbell. But that's what that is. So, and then it falls down and knocks over things that are on the food. Yeah. Never mind. You will rue the day for neglecting to give little Joey her cowbell, all the while giving somebody a cowbell for butt plugs. Robin, what kind of a message are you sending to the very impressionable youngsters, Joey 2 and Junior? Well, Robin, it's like we hardly know you anymore. You've become a different person. Just so you know, Robin, we are very sentient political animals, and we can be hurt very easily. Well, anyway, speaking of political animals and butt plugs, oh, we're off and running, aren't we? Did you happen to see the Republican debate in Ohio for the right to run for the Senate seat of the retiring Rob Portman? Yes, Mike Gibbons and Josh Mandel stood up and literally went toe-to-toe and nose-to-nose, telling each other to back off during the recent debate. Mandel, who really has little to run on, told Gibbons that he has worked very hard in the past, serving in two tours in Iraq after Gibbons stated Mandel was not working when Mandel accused Gibbons of scoring millions in stock options from a Chinese company. What a classic example of, come on, let's you and him fight. The two became indignant and both stood up and got in each other's faces for a few moments. Oh, no, here's Junior. Hell, I thought they were going to pull out the guns and have a duel right there on television. We got to talk about your language, Junior. Yes, I really thought Mandel, noun verb, I served two tours in Iraq, Mandel, was going to challenge Mike Gibbons to an old-fashioned duel, just like Hamilton and Burr back in the days of the Wild, Wild West, because that's what Ohio's becoming these days after the idiot governor recently removed virtually every restriction on gun laws, considering as of June 12th in Ohio, you no longer need a permit or training to carry a handgun. Way to go, Governor DeWine, you degenerate.
Good point, Jeffrey.
A recent study showed that in Ohio, since gun laws have been relaxed over the past several years, violence with guns has gone up significantly, including homicides and suicides. Well, how about that? So much for your Republican mantra about the right to life restrictions. You're an idiot and a hypocrite.
In Australia, we have very sensible gun laws after just one multiple shooting back in 1996 in Port Arthur.
Oh, good job, Joey, too, for you and your country. Speaking of the not-so-Wild West, although Ohio wishes to become the Wild, Wild West out in the western part of this country, on this day back in 2013, the state of Colorado passed some good gun laws. The state of Colorado passed a law that would put limits on guns in the state. The new law required more background checks for those wishing to buy guns online and privately, and it limited the number of rounds in ammunition magazines. The changes in law came as a reaction to the tragic Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut back in 2012.
Well, it is good to see at least one state thinks like my great country and learn from one of those terrible shootings.
Nicely done, Joey, too. You know we love you. Oh, this just in. Jane Timken, a woman who adores Trump and apparently thinks it's okay literally for a political animal such as Trump to sexually assault women, has decided to change her name. Yes, Jane Timken will now be known as Jane Trumpkin. Oh, yes, Jane Timken, or Trumpkin, as she will now be known, is so far up Trump's ass that she'll serve as Trump's butt plug. Yes, Jane would like to be as close to the Trumps as she can go, so the newly named Trumpkin would be considered next of Trumpkin. Oh, Jeffrey. Along the same lines with the way Marsha Blackburn likes to be up the butts of Democrats. Please! Constantly harassing them and with her new ridiculous do. I think she looks and acts like a troll. You are not the only one to think about that. Well, Junior gets the last word.
I got to go see LeBron and the Lakers play last night against Cleveland. We had a wonderful time. LeBron is such a great basketball player and a good person. More on that tomorrow.
But before we go, just a correction. As Robin mentioned, West Virginia did expand Medicaid in the state of West Virginia, thanks to your governor. Not even Joe Manchin could stop that from happening. However, your home state of Alabama, thanks to Hee-Haw Meemaw, that's good, does not have the expansion. It's not my home state. It's my birth state. I just got those two mixed up. We regret the error. Junior also has some regrets.
Yes, Joey, and we also regret the error that is Joe Manchin, as he just might deny the Supreme Court justice her rightful seat on the high court.
So this has been Joey's Journal for the 22nd day of March, 2022, a Tuesday, a Titanic Tuesday, with Giraffery watching out for all the bad political animals. There's a $10 political animal challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffery and Junior and Joey, too. Thank you for that. Hopefully that'll get met, and that'll take us down to $960 to go to get caught up. So $960, that would mean we need, that's today, and yesterday, and Friday, and $60 of Thursday. So, that's progress. Hopefully somebody meets that fairly quickly. It's only $10. Rob, so, I dropped the cowbell a couple of times on the line. It makes a hell of a clatter, doesn't it? Lee in New York, Ohio debate. They may not have ended in a gun duel, but both were definitely devoted to shooting off their mouths. I think their motto should be, a mind is a terrible thing to use. Okay. Billable Rick says, Jane Trumpkin. Okay. Okay, I'm not going to get in trouble again. Hate the thought of hurting that little kangaroo's heart. Yeah, it's... And so, also earlier... By way of just sort of, oh, dear God, wait, time out. It's a little wet behind the ears, insurrectionist Josh Hawley. I'm sure he's going to call her a pedophile any second now.
had discretion. They came before you. You had discretion to sentence one way or another in these seven cases. Not every case, of course, do you have discretion. Sometimes the law requires you to impose a sentence, certain sentence. But in these seven, you had discretion, and in each of these seven, you chose to depart both from the federal guidelines and also from the government's, the prosecutor's recommendation. Senator Lee's asked you a little bit about this. Senator Cruz has asked you about it. He had a chart with the seven cases on it. Before we jump into those, I just want to correct the record on one or two things. Senator Coons suggested that in three cases, Nickerson, Wynn, and Fife, you actually imposed sentences either within the guidelines or at the same level of the prosecution. But in Nickerson, you didn't have any discretion. That was an 11C1C case. The law bound you. And Wynn wasn't a child porn case, and neither was Fife. Just one other quick thing to clarify. As to this comments about the probation office, the probation office doesn't issue national guidelines, right? I mean, the probation office doesn't issue sentencing guidelines. They're not public. They're not recommended to all judges. The probation office provides advice to judges case by case, usually in private, usually not available to the public. Is that right, Judge?
Not exactly, Senator. The probation office,
not even remotely, dumbass,
criminal cases is assigned by the court to work with respect to the evaluation of cases in every case consistent with Congress's requirements. The probation office prepares a pre-sentence report in which they review all of the statutory factors concerning sentencing. Congress has a statute for sentencing. It requires judges to consider the nature and circumstances of the offense, the history and characteristics of the defendant, the need for the sentence imposed to promote various purposes of punishment. There are many purposes listed in the statute. And the probation office is the arm of the court that does factual investigations in every criminal case, unless there are certain cases in which you can waive it. But the background is the probation office's assessment of the facts related to a particular sentence and a particular crime. And the probation office's report, when a court sentences, actually, in most cases, becomes the findings of fact of the court. And so the probation office appears just like the prosecution and the defense. The probation office has written a report, and they make a recommendation to the court based on their independent analysis related to the facts of a particular crime and defendant and sentence.
Understood. So they give the court counsel. Understood. However, they don't issue guidelines. They're not uniform. It is by its very nature a case-by-case inquiry, as you said. The report goes to the judge. As I understand it, the pre-sentencing report, I'm sorry, the probation reports are not public in all of the cases that we're talking about here. I'd love to see them if they are. But it's not as if there's one set of guidelines that are federal sentencing guidelines, and then there's the probation guidelines. The probation office is giving advice to the judge. It varies case by case,
Senator.
But it's not the same.
Sorry, but I thought you were done.
That's all right. Let me ask you about a specific case. I mean, let's talk about. I listed these seven cases in which you had discretion and you did not follow the prosecutor's recommendation or the sentencing guidelines. But let's just talk about one of them, because we've talked about some of them as a group. Let's talk about United States versus Hawkins. I think that's one you probably remember from 2013. The defendant there was Wesley Hawkins. He was 18 years old at the time. He uploaded five video files of child pornography from his computer to YouTube. This is how the police got onto him. He then uploaded another 36 depictions of child porn and other lewd photos of children to his iCloud account. When the police executed a search on his apartment on the premises, they found 17 videos on his laptop and 16 images of child pornography, all of them very graphic, some of them involving very young children. 17 videos in particular. This is from the government sentencing memorandum in this case. Just so we understand the facts, here are some of the videos that the government charged and they recovered. There was a 24-minute, 6-second video depicting a 12-year-old male committing a sexual act. I'm not gonna read exactly what it was. There's a 1 minute and 57 second video depicting an 8-year-old committing a sexual act. There was an 11 minute and 47 second video depicting an 11-year-old committing a sexual act and being raped by an adult male. There was a 15 minute and 19 second video depicting 2 11-year-olds committing sexual acts. There was a 7 minute and 51 second video depicting a 12-year-old committing a sexual act. So, as the government said in this case, and I'm quoting now from the transcript of the sentencing hearing, 17 videos is a lot. And some of the videos, including the ones that are described in the statement of the offense, and I've just related some of them, are very lengthy and include numerous images, numerous views, sometimes collages, sometimes multiple victims. You see the act in progress. The government goes on to describe some of these as sadomasochistic images. So this is a tough case. This is one of those tough cases you were referencing earlier. You talked about it this morning. So these cases are terrible. This is one of them. This is terrible stuff. This is not a good guy who's doing this stuff. Guidelines recommendation in the case.
Just in case anybody's wondering, there was no need to go into the particulars of the case. But I don't know, maybe Josh Hawley's into that. Or more likely, maybe he was hoping to inflame and further keep indignant his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing goon followers.
The Protect Act, because you've talked about it. You've given lectures on it. And it was enacted, as I said, in 2003. It was 84-0 was the vote here in the Senate. The concern, the reason the Protect Act was put into place is the Senate was concerned over lenient sentences by judges in child porn cases, which is what you described. You said about it, there was an increasing perception on Capitol Hill and within DOJ that liberal judges were to blame for the downward pressure on federal sentences and that legislation was necessary to rein them in. That's you in 2011 describing this law. So Congress has set the guidelines here, 84-0 in the Senate. I noticed the chairman voted for it, as did a number of other members of this committee. So the Congress sets the range. Essentially, it's 97 months up to 10 years. Now, the prosecutor in this case, this is in D.C., of course, you're on the federal district court. The prosecutor in this case, it's a liberal administration, I think it's fair to say. This is in the state of Texas. See my colleague from Texas next to me here. The prosecutor in this case, nevertheless, still asked for 2 full years in prison. You gave the defendant 3 months. Guidelines called for 10 years. Prosecutor wanted at least 2. You gave him 3 months. And when you did, you made a number of arguments and statements in the record, and I'd like to go through some of them because I've read them all. And the first argument you made was that the federal guidelines that punished child porn offenders, the ones that Congress wrote, were, and I'm quoting you now, are in many ways outdated. That's your quote. And you went on to say about why you thought they were outdated. I'm going to quote you again. You say, and I quote, "I don't feel that it's appropriate to increase the penalty on the basis of the number of images or prepubescent victims," meaning little kids, "as the guidelines require, because these circumstances exist in many cases, if not most, and don't signal an especially heinous or egregious child pornography offense," end quote. I just want to ask you about that because I just have to tell you I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it. We're talking about 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds.
Well, to be fair, Josh Hawley has a hard time wrapping his head around the idea of we being a constitutional republic. And well, frankly, he probably has a hard time wrapping his head around tying his own shoelaces.
Pornography offense. Help me understand that. What word would you use if it's not heinous or egregious? How would you describe it?
Thank you, Senator, for letting me address the concern that you've put forward based on the record that you've reviewed. As a judge who is a mom and has been tasked with the responsibility of actually reviewing the evidence that you would not describe in polite company, the evidence that you are pointing to, discussing, addressing in this context is evidence that I have seen in my role as a judge. And it is heinous. It is egregious. What a judge has to do is determine how to sentence defendants proportionately consistent with the elements that the statutes include, with the requirements that Congress has set forward. Unwarranted sentencing disparities is something that the Sentencing Commission has been focused on for a long time in regard to child pornography offenses. All of the offenses are horrible. All of the offenses are egregious. But the guidelines, as you pointed out, are being departed from even with respect to the government's recommendation. The government, in this case and in others, has asked for a sentence that is substantially less than the guideline penalty. And so what I was discussing was that phenomenon, that the guidelines in this area are not doing the work of differentiating defendants, as the government itself indicated in this very case. And so that's what I was talking about, but I want to assure you, Senator, that I take these cases very seriously, that these cases include the notion by many defendants that the folks at issue, that the defendants themselves are collecting these images on the internet. They're terrible things that have happened, but they're not involved, say the defendants. They're not focused on, you know, what is actually happening to the children. And so part of my sentencing was about redirecting the defendant's attention. It's not just about how much time a person spends in prison. It's about understanding the harm of this behavior. It's about all of the other kinds of restraints that sex offenders are ordered rightly to live under at the end of the day. The sentences in these cases include not only prison time, but restraints on computer use, sometimes for decades, restraints on ability to go near children, sometimes for decades. All of these things judges consider in order to affect what Congress has required, which is a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary to promote the purposes of punishment.
Yeah, well, let me just ask you about that last point, because you've said this a couple of times now, the sentences that Congress require. Congress wanted the guidelines to be mandatory. Congress wrote the guidelines in this case. They wanted them to be mandatory. They gave the courts factors to consider to choose between the sentencing range. Congress wanted you to choose between 97 and 121 months. That's what Congress wanted. The Supreme Court in Booker said that the sentencing guidelines would be discretionary, so the Supreme Court gave you the discretion. But if we're talking about what Congress has wanted, Congress wanted them to be mandatory. My only point in raising that is just to say that you had discretion in these cases, and you used your discretion to choose the sentences that you did. Let me ask you about some of the things, though, that you said, because you said this morning, and I appreciated it, how you want to direct the defendants. You want to get them to own up to what they've done in these cases. And I thought that was powerful, and I thought it was right. But let me just ask you about what you said to this defendant. You said to this defendant, for whom you sentenced to only 3 months in prison, that your collection, I'm quoting you, your collection at the time that you were caught was not actually as large as it seems. The government felt the need to respond to you on the record. They said the government doesn't believe that it's appropriate to just disregard the number of images, that the number of images can be appropriate. And indeed, in this case, the defendant has amassed an extremely large collection of child pornography. But you disregarded that. You also told the defendant, you said this seems to be a case where you were fascinated by sexual images involving what were essentially your peers. And then you went on to say the defendant was merely trying to satisfy his curiosity. Curiosity is your word, One more thing on this, same idea. You said you were viewing, this is you to the defendant, you were viewing sex acts between children who were not much younger than you. And this whole discussion is about why you're only giving him 3 months. Judge, he was 18. These kids are 8. I don't see in what sense they're peers. I've got a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 16-month-old at home. And I live in fear that they will be exposed to, let alone exploited.
Well, Senator, the rest of us live in fear that they live with you.
Their peers. And that, therefore, you were viewing sex acts between children who are not much younger than you, and that that's somehow a reason to only give him 3 months. Help me understand this.
Senator, I don't have the record of that entire case in front of me. What I recall with respect to that case is that unlike the many other child pornography offenders that I had seen as a judge and that I was aware of in my work on the Sentencing Commission, this particular defendant had just graduated from high school. And some of, perhaps not all when you were looking at the records, but some of the materials that he was looking at were older teenagers, were older victims. And the point, Senator, is that you said before the probation office is making recommendations and they do so on a case-by-case basis. That is what Congress requires. That this is not done at the level of.
But you had discretion, Judge. You admit that, right? I just want to be clear.
Senator, sentencing is a discretionary act of a judge, but it's not a numbers game. It's not. I understand that Congress wanted the guidelines to be mandatory. The Supreme Court in 2005 determined that they couldn't be, in an opinion by Justice Scalia. Determined that they couldn't be, and Congress since then has not come back to amend them or to change them or to make them mandatory again. And so there is discretion at sentencing, and when you look at the sentencing statutes, Congress has given the judges not only the discretion to make the decision, but required judges to do so on an individualized basis, taking into account not only the guidelines, but also various factors, including the age of the defendant, the circumstances of the defendant, the terrible nature of the crime, the harm to the victims. All of these factors are taken into account, and the probation office assists the court in determining what sentence is sufficient but not greater than necessary. And I appreciate, Senator, that you have looked at these from the standpoint of statistics, that you're questioning whether or not I take them seriously or I have some reason to handle them in either a different way than my peers or a different way than other cases. And I assure you that I do not, that if you were to look at the greater body of not only my more than 100 sentences, but also the sentences of other judges in my district and nationwide, you would see a very similar exercise of attempting to do what it is that judges do, attempting to take into account all of the relevant factors and do justice individually in each case.
Well, let's keep talking about this case. You also said to this individual who is an adult, tried as an adult, 18 years old, you also said to him, besides saying that you thought his victims were his peers, you also said there's no reason to think that you are a pedophile. And then you went on to say, again, that's another reason why you weren't going to give him, you're only going to give him 3 months because you had adjudged that he wasn't a pedophile. And then you said, and this is something I really need your help understanding, then you apologized to him. And I just have to tell you, I can't quite figure this out. You said to him, this is a truly difficult situation. I appreciate that your family's in the audience. I feel so sorry for them and for you and for the anguish this has caused all of you. I feel terrible about the collateral consequences of this conviction. And then you go on to say sex offenders are truly shunned in our society. I'm just trying to figure out, Judge, is he the victim here or are the victims the victims? You're saying that you're apologizing to him. You're saying you're sorry for the anguish this has caused him. There was a victim impact statement in this case. It didn't get read into the record, but it was there. I've described the videos that we have. You say earlier in the case, you talk about how heinous these crimes are, and you describe them to your credit. You describe how heinous it is to your credit. And yet, here you are giving him 3 months and apologizing to him and saying you feel sorry for the anguish it's caused him, and also saying you think that sex offenders are truly shunned in our society. So just talk about that. Help me understand. I mean, is he a victim? Is that your view here? Is that why you said this? Is that what you meant by it?
Senator, I again, don't have the entire record. I remember in that particular case, I considered it to be unusual, in part for the reasons that I described. I remember in that case that defense counsel was arguing for probation, in part because he argued that here we had a very young man just graduated from high school. He presented all of his diplomas and certificates and the things that he had done and argued, consistent with what I was seeing in the record, that this particular defendant had gotten into this in a way that was, I thought, inconsistent with some of the other cases that I had seen. Part of what a judge is doing, as required by Congress, is thinking about this case, thinking about unwarranted sentencing disparities, that's in the statute, other cases, other determinations that a judge may have made about this. I don't remember in detail this particular case, but I do recall it being unusual. And so my only point to you is that judges are doing the work of assessing in each case a number of factors that are set forward by Congress, all against the backdrop of heinous criminal behavior. But the guidelines are no longer mandatory. Congress has not corrected, as you would say, the Supreme Court's determination about that, Justice Scalia's decision that the guidelines are not mandatory. Congress has not said that. And Congress has given judges factors to consider. This, in my view, was an unusual case that had a number of factors that the defendant was pointing out, that the government was pointing out, that the probation office was pointing out. And I sent this 18-year-old to 3 months in federal prison under circumstances that were presented in this case because I wanted him to understand that what he had done was harmful, that what he had done was unlawful, that what he had done violated the law and needed to be punished, not only by prison, but also by all of the other things that the law requires of a judge who is sentencing in this area.
But Judge, with all due respect, and I'm tell you what, I'll be direct with you. I am questioning your discretion, your judgment. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm not questioning you as a person. I'm not questioning your excellence as a judge, frankly. But you said it. You had discretion, and that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm questioning how you used your discretion in these cases. And to me, to take a guy who's 18 years old, who has what the government says is an extremely large collection of prepubescent pornography, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, we're talking about, I mean, gobs of hours of time here that he has. And you say to him, what? That you say that, well, you know, it was just a collection. I mean, he was just viewing it. And it was, you know, essentially they were his peers. You say to him that he's not a pedophile. I don't know how you know that. I don't know why that's relevant to the guidelines, but maybe it is. You say he's not a pedophile. You say that you're very sorry for him and what he suffered, and then you give him 3 months when, frankly, a liberal prosecutor is asking for 2 full years. I mean, it does seem like an extraordinary case.
And I'd like to bite his head off and chew on it for a while.
When in every case, child porn case you've had discretion, you've sentenced below the guidelines and below the government's recommendation. And saying that sex offenders are truly shunned in our society
is a true statement.
It reminds me, it echoes what you said as early as law school on that Harvard Law Review article Senator Blumenthal was just talking about. There you say, and I'm quoting you now, in the current climate of fear, hatred, and revenge associated with the release of convicted sex criminals, courts must be especially attentive to legislative enactments regarding these sex criminals. I guess like this, the enactment here, the Protect Act that Congress enacted. So I want to try to understand here, is it your view that society is too hard on sex offenders? You say they truly are shunned in society. You wrote that many of these laws are products of a climate of fear, hatred, and revenge. So just is that still your view? I mean, do you think that these laws are too tough, that we're too tough on sex offenders? Explain what you meant in this case in 2013. And
she didn't say it was.
Seems to be the same thing you said many years ago.
Senator, it's not the same thing I said many years ago. Many years ago, as a law school student, I was evaluating a new set of legislation, state laws about registration, and I was analyzing them as law students do. Wasn't about the sex crime. It was about the characterization of the law. Is it a punitive law? Is it a prescriptive law? And how would a court go about determining that? That was the frame that I used then. It could have been about anything. It was about the characterization of legislation.
But could I, just to, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I've only got 2.5 minutes left, but I just want to make sure I understand this. This is, I'm quoting from your conclusion now. This is on page 1728 of the Harvard Law Review. This is your conclusion. In the current climate of fear, hatred, and revenge associated with the release of convicted sex criminals, courts need to be especially attentive to legislative enactments. So that's a conclusory statement. You're saying that there is a climate of fear, hatred, and revenge that are informing these laws. And you described some of the laws earlier, I think, Megan's Law and others. Senator Cruz asked you about some of those. I'm trying to understand what you meant by that, because you're saying something similar in the Hawkins case. You're saying that society truly shuns our sex offenders.
Sorry, Senator, with all due respect, my article is now in the record. People can read it, and they can see that I was evaluating these laws not to determine their constitutionality, not to say that they shouldn't be enacted, but to talk about the ways in which courts make determinations about the character of the law and all of the consequences that follow from them. In law school, I had not had any experience in terms of the criminal justice system, and I was doing what law students do, which is seeking to analyze in a creative way new legislation. With respect to Mr. Hawkins, I was doing what judges do, which is look at the statute 18 U.S.C. 3553A, exercise discretion as Congress has required us to do, take into account all of the various aspects of a particular case and make a determination consistent with my authority, my judgment, and understanding fully the egregious nature of the crime. As you said, even the prosecutors in these cases are not recommending guideline sentences. The probation office, which is an independent authority, looking at these cases and the facts related to them, are not recommending guideline sentences. This is a particular area where the commission has seen an enormous amount of disparity and has in fact asked Congress to come back and address to help judges who are looking at these cases to be able to rely on the guidelines.
Which Congress has declined to do.
Senator, in that case, we have the statute that Congress has enacted concerning penalties, and we have judges who are doing their level best to make sure that people are held accountable as they need to be in our society in a fair and just way.
Mr. Chairman, my time's expired. Thank you, Judge. I have no further questions.
Thank God it did. I let that roll as long as I did for a reason. Now, that was all awash in, and Dick Durbin is setting the record straight now. But I let that roll as long as it did because there are a lot of people in this country who might think that this is a new line of attack. But it's not. It's just more cueballism. Cubism. And not in the Picasso way. It's QAnon garbage. Red meat for the ignorant grunters. But beyond that, and by the way, Matt in San Francisco says, personally, I think Judge Jackson should be seated on the court if she can get through the questioning without muttering the response, bitch, please. Matt, that was this morning when Lady G was questioning her. We'll get to that. I hope. But there's, triggering is the wrong word, but it's this line of inquiry, sleazy as it is, well, I guess Billy Pilgrim-like, I came unstuck in time. And I recalled, I think it was 2004. I'm almost certain it was 2004 when this line of attack was shown to be brutally and hatefully effective. It happened in West Virginia, and there was little mention made of it outside West Virginia. At that point in time, a sleazy, filthy coal baron by the name of Don Blankenship had some multi-million-dollar litigation going before the Supreme Court of the state of West Virginia, the Supreme Court of Appeals. And there was a lot on the line. And he needed to put his thumb on the scale. So he found a creepy little nobody lawyer, nobody had ever heard of him, named Brent Benjamin, and ran him as a Republican for a seat on the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia to replace a good justice by the name of Warren McGraw, a Democrat. And the vehicle he used was a bunch of political signs, and he pumped millions of dollars into Benjamin's campaign, saying simply, who is Brent Benjamin? In 2004, who is Brent Benjamin was the who is John Galt of the Ayn Rand acolytes. Well, fairly effective advertising campaign, but what really put it over the top was the fact that Warren McGraw, in the course of dealing with his job as a justice of the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, the court had before it the criminal case of a teenager whose first name was Tony. And I frankly don't remember his last name. But that kid was a mess. And what had happened to him was he came from horrible circumstances. If I recall correctly, he was bounced from one foster home to another. And somewhere along the way, the kid was sexually abused and left largely untreated, uncounseled, unhelped. And eventually, that kid did what other kids similarly situated sometimes, not always, do. And he engaged in acting out behavior and in turn sexually abused another child. It is certainly not unheard of. Well, the case came before the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia, and Judge McGraw, a decent man, with a teenager before him, exercised mercy instead of revenge. And what Judge Jackson says about a climate of fear and revenge is true. I've been talking about the punishment fetish we have in this country for almost two decades, and we frequently enact it in our laws. Our neo-Calvinist nature makes us yearn to see punishment meted out in a sort of Old Testament take him out behind, beyond the city gates and stone him, yea, verily, unto death kind of thing. Well, the kid reoffended. And Don Blankenship went absolutely hog wild and created a bullshit AstroTurf organization called And For the Sake of the Kids. And brought in political donations for his campaign via that sleazy technique. And I swear to God, if they would have let him, Don Blankenship would have gnawed the arms and legs off of that boy on live TV. He had this entire state in an absolute damned uproar over a kid who was as much a victim as a perpetrator. And it worked. It worked so well. Brutally, it worked. And so Brent Benjamin got onto the court, voted exactly the way he was paid to vote. Don Blankenship got what he wanted. And eventually the world forgot about that kid whose back Don Blankenship had ridden like a borrowed mule. I don't even know if the kid is alive or dead now. And if he's alive, he probably hopes that people have simply forgotten his name the way I did. So this was nothing new, as I heard it take place. It's just what Republicans do. As to Josh Hawley, Matt in San Francisco says, you know, if you voted to confirm a credibly accused sexual predator to the court, you abdicate your right to ask anyone about the sentencing of said predators. Amen, Matt. Amen. I can imagine that maybe Brat Kavanaugh, who loves beer and little drunk, passed out girls who can't object, Well, I guess he's probably watching these hearings going, this is uncomfortable. Because the allegations against Brett Kavanaugh were far more severe than a teenager looking at child pornography. And I do not downplay what the horror of that. Remember, a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican cop in Louisiana and his wife were actually running a kiddie porn shop. A member of the Louisiana State Police, I do recall. Nobody will bring that up. No. Judge Jackson probably got that case and the other cases that she dealt with right. Because there's a hell of a big difference between being a federal judge and being some blowhard who waves on insurrectionists to attack the capital of the United States of America. A huge difference. But I mentioned a clip, and I finally figured out where it is, and it bears mentioning. Mentioned this last night. Marsha, goodness, Blackburn, vying for dumbest person in the Senate. I know, Tommy the Tuber, Ron Johnson. Marsha's coming up fast on the inside lane. Ron and Raleigh wrote earlier, subject line, fear is the mind killer. Once again, the Horn family is on straight road. I'm sure you've heard the comments made by Marsha Blackburn prior to the hearings for Judge Jackson. These are those comments. Wait a minute. There we go. These are those comments. What a genius she is.
Good. Constitutionally unsound rulings like Griswold versus Connecticut, Kelo versus City of New London, and NFIB versus Sebelius confused Tennesseans and left Congress wondering who gave the court permission to bypass our system of checks and balances. It is the 11th hour, and where Judge Jackson stands on the Constitution remains a secret. Good.
Remains a secret. Actually, no, it doesn't. And just no. Well, I played that because Ron and Raleigh wrote. She mentions Griswold versus Connecticut, Kelo versus New London City, and NFIB versus Sebelius. I'm not sure which of us mentioned the intention of the Republican Party to go after Griswold as a backdoor to overturning Roe versus Wade. I've been talking about that for about as long as this program's been on. Kelo is the case that allows localities to use eminent domain to steal the property of people that don't have the power to resist corporate power. I'm not sure where Marsha actually stands on this issue, but I called bullshit on this ruling years ago. Of course, NFIB versus Sebelius was the case that upheld the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. Yeah, Marsha said the quiet parts out loud. You can look at the thrust of all Republican efforts and see that their intention is to instill fear into the white population of the U.S., and to my mind, they're succeeding. From trans issues to critical race theory, they're lying without shame to gain political advantage. I've seen clips where women are in a panic over trans women participating in sports. Oh my God, I've been participating in some of those. So fearful that they are walking away from the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party didn't leave me. I didn't leave. The Democratic Party left me. Joining the Republicans over this issue. These women are willing to give up the rights that the Democratic Party has fought for where women's rights are concerned to join the party that has fought against these rights. The transgender population is around 4%. It's probably lower than that, closer to 2%. These people are willing to lose everything over an issue that could be adjudicated in a better way. I remember when Christine Jorgensen became the first well-known person who had a gender reassignment surgery in the U.S. What most people don't know is that German doctors started doing these surgeries in the 1920s. So after 100 years of transgender activity, the Republican Party are throwing the country into a panic over a small group of people trying to live their authentic lives. You'll notice no one mentions that cis girls are playing boys' sports. No, that never gets mentioned. Or the fact that Leah Thomas had her ass handed to her in her final race, beaten by a trans guy swimming on the Yale team, on the Yale women's team. Trans guy, Isaac Heng, came in first. Leah came in dead last. Isaac gets to swim on the women's team at Yale because he is not on testosterone. Critical race theory, which has become the bogeyman that is being used to scare the crap out of white parents. If you listen to the rhetoric about CRT, you have to realize the anti-CRT movement, which is astroturfed, is only about white children. Black children don't even get a mention. If you teach about the legal structures of systemic racism, who actually gets hurt by the truth? The Republican Party has no shame and lie about anything they believe will allow them to get and maintain power. They found the sweet spot in the psyche of white people defined by fear and bigotry. I've said before that I believe that they have won because truth and facts are powerless against lies. Remember, lies will travel around the world before the truth gets its boots on. Absolutely true, Ron. And that, of course, was what Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz was having a baby about earlier. A book about teaching children how not to be racists. I swear, I think I heard him say something like, well, you don't want to hurt the little racist children's feelings, do you?
Yeah, I'm wrong voice. You don't want the little racist to feel bad, do you?
And I'm always watching these things thinking of, you know, what I wish somebody would say. You know, Senator Cruz, I know you like Dr. Seuss and whatnot, but let's talk about some grown-up stuff for a minute. You ever seen South Pacific? Yeah, it's got some problematic songs. There's Nothing Like a Dame, really. But there's one very important song in South Pacific. And it's about racism. And it's called You Have to Be Carefully Taught. There is not a racist child in this country, Senator Cruz, who was born a racist. They have all been carefully taught. And they're taught that way by your voters, the people who support the crap that you peddle, Senator. Apparently, Maisie was going after Republicans and all the judges they confirmed that were low sentences for sexual predators. Good. I had a feeling that would be coming along. Yep. Those confused Tennessee voters. Stephen New York says, yeah, I can definitely see the rubes going down around the Waffle House counter pondering the meaning of Griswold. Well, as I've said before, that Griswold, he gets himself in some real spots. Remember what happened at Wally World? Yeah. Let's pop back in and check in on Senator Hirono. If anything comes through, it is the absolute brilliance of Judge Jackson. One of the most humongous differences between this hearing and, say, the hearing for Justice Handmaid or the hearing for Brat is that she's not actually filibustering their questions. She's answering them. And they're getting all the time. The senators are. Whereas if you're Amy Covid Barrett or Brad or Ansboy Neal, well, that's a different story. They were well schooled to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and say not a damn thing. Let's see what's going on here.
In your district that handles a case in a particular way. And with respect to the McGahn case, the precedent wasn't just close, it was nearly identical. The Myers case involved the former White House counsel and the argument by the executive that the former White House counsel had absolute immunity with respect to a request by the legislature that she provide testimony. My case involved a former White House counsel who was claiming absolute immunity at the request of the executive in response to a legislative subpoena. In both cases, not only was the absolute immunity issue on the table, but in both cases, the same threshold issues about whether or not there was jurisdiction in the court because the legislature had standing or didn't have standing, which was the argument that was being made. The same question about whether the court could hear a dispute between the legislature and the executive branch. All of those issues had previously been considered by my colleague in the district court. And he wrote an extensive, I'm talking about Judge Bates, he wrote an extensive opinion analyzing each of the issues. And so at a minimum, as the second judge dealing with these exact same issues, I had to look at what he did and decide. Was it persuasive? Did I agree? And I did.
Judge Jackson, of course, if there had been a vertical precedent, i.e. from the Supreme Court or the Circuit Court, that was on point to your McGann situation, yes, you would have had to follow that precedent, but there wasn't. And so you followed a reasoning by another district judge that made a lot of sense to me, and that certainly makes sense to me. You discussed stare decisis and the importance of precedent in your opinion, and this is what you wrote, quote, "It is interesting to note that the doctrine of stare decisis performs a limiting function that reflects the foundational principles that undergird the federal government's tripartite constitutional system. This is because deciding a legal issue anew each time that same question is presented without any reference to what has been done before nudges a court outside of its established domain of saying what the law is and into the realm of legislating what the law should be." I know that you've been asked the questions about the importance of precedent before, but maybe you can just tell us one more time why precedent is important in our judicial system.
Thank you, Senator. Our judicial system is one that is designed to uphold the rule of law. Unlike other systems in other societies, some other societies, we believe that we have a government of laws and not men. And yet there are men and women who are acting as judges in the context of our system. What precedent does is ensure that there's consistency across the different individuals who are tasked with the solemn responsibility of interpreting the law. It ensures that there's public confidence that the law is what is guiding judges in their decision making and not just their own individual views. And so it's crucial for maintaining public confidence, maintaining stability in the law, establishing a system that has predictability in it, all of which supports confidence in the judiciary, which is the currency of the judicial branch.
Because of the importance of precedents in promoting confidence, et cetera, you know, people need to know what the law is. And so precedent is important on this, on that score. And if you are confirmed to the Supreme Court, what factors would you consider before overturning precedent?
Well, there are many factors that the Supreme Court considers, and not just whether they think a prior precedent is wrong. That is one of the factors. The court has said that a precedent that is egregiously wrong is one that is subject to reconsideration. But in order to actually make the determination about overturning it, in addition to it being wrong, the court considers whether or not there's been reliance on that precedent? And if so, how much? The court considers whether or not the precedent is workable. Sometimes the court will issue a ruling in a case and it turns out that it's not actually functioning in the way that the court intended. And so that might be a reason to revisit it. The court considers whether or not other precedents in the area have shifted such that the foundation for the particular precedent is no longer sustainable. And the court considers whether there are changes in the facts that relate to that precedent or a new understanding of the facts that relate to a precedent. All of those factors are things that a court takes into that the Supreme Court takes into account when it decides whether or not to revisit a precedent.
Therefore, the court should consider all of those factors. I would say reliance factors loom large, as far as I'm concerned, before overturning a precedent. But basically, if you have five members of the court deciding to overturn a precedent, they can do so, right?
Under our scheme, yes, under the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing more and more precedents being asked to be overturned. An analysis by National Affairs found that since 2017, when Justice Gorsuch was appointed to the court has shown, in, I quote, an increasing readiness to overturn precedent, end quote. This is true for both longstanding precedents and those that are just a few years old. For example, in 2018, Janus decision, the court overturned a 41-year-old precedent called Abood. That decision weakened public sector unions. Justice Alito first signaled that he wanted conservative anti-union groups to challenge Abood in his 2012 decision in Knox versus SEIU. This is called signaling, and Justice Alito definitely signaled his desire to revisit the Abood decision. So yes, these groups, they got the message. They brought case after case to meet the criteria that Justice Alito laid out. And although they came close in 2016, Justice Scalia's death left the court stuck in a 4-4 decision in a case called Fredericks v. California Teachers Association. Basically, the minute Justice Gorsuch was confirmed, the court finally had a conservative 5-4 majority to overturn Abood, and the result was Janus. I followed these lines of cases very closely. So that is what happened. They waited for Justice Gorsuch and boom, 5-4 against unions. In another example, the courts acknowledged four most conservative justices, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh, dissented in June medical, voting to overturn a precedent banning burdensome and unnecessary restrictions placed on abortion providers. This particular precedent was only 4 years old. Now the court is poised to overturn Roe v. Wade, even though women have relied on their constitutional right to have an abortion for nearly 50 years. Of course, I'm not suggesting that Supreme Court decision or precedents are sacrosanct, because I'm thankful the court can and did revisit precedents like Plessy v. Ferguson that were wrong the day they were decided. But justices should not be seen to be advancing their individual political or ideological agendas at the expense of individual rights and precedents that people have relied on. One result of the court's new approach is that people's view of the court is changing for the worst. A recent Pew poll found that 44% of Americans now disapprove of the Supreme Court. This is up 15 points from August 2020. Shortly before the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died and Amy Coney Barrett was appointed to fill her seat. I think court watches acknowledge there is an ideological split in this current Supreme Court when we are seeing more cases decided on ideological bases, not on the facts and the law. I think it leads to the American people questioning whether the court is a fair and objective arbiter of cases in controversy. You were asked earlier today about your representation of Guantanamo detainees. Just to make it clear, as a federal public defender, you were assigned to represent...
Okay, I'll interrupt for a second. Did Maisie Hirono just say Amy COVID Barrett? It just went by. What? And Stephen New York was asked the same question. But, you know, when we talk about, as Maisie Hirono just did, decisions being made on a strictly ideological basis, I think it's valuable that we not get trapped into thinking that that is something new. And in this context, I always think of Richard Hofstadter and the paranoid style in American politics from, what, 1962? Something like that? Well, I've mentioned in the past that I enjoy the Travis McGee series of, problematic as they are, crime fiction. McDonald was a craftsman. He was no hack. And there's a lot of social commentary tucked away in those novels. And I was finishing one last night, and it features a guy who is described as being 10 degrees to the right of the Birchers. And he puts some dialogue in one of his character's mouth toward the end of the book, And he and that character says, "Reasonable conservatism is a healthy thing, but that kind," talking about this character, Dr. Face, "that kind of poisonous, divisionist, hate-mongering Face has been preaching is one of the standard communist techniques. If you create a radical right, their vicious nonsense pushes more people toward the radical left. Then, when fear pushes people into violence or silence, the comrades enter and flourish. My friend, any way that they can make Americans hate Americans helps the cause." Now, in the mid-1960s, this is in the context of Castro's Cuba. But if we take it in the context of 2016 to now, it's Trump's America. It's MAGA. It is the detractive force of two polar opposite magnets. And here we are. And I thought, and I do not wish to discount Senator Hirono, but there's other stuff banging around out there that is worth a mention, especially in the context of, you know, Marsha saying we need to get rid of Griswold and Kelo and Sebelius. Well, like I've said a million times before, a Marsha Blackburn doesn't just come up with this. She is a creature. She is not an independent actor. She does not have enough brains to come in out of the rain. She doesn't have enough sense to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. Probably hold it up over her head, look at the heel, read the directions, and then pour the piss all over herself. That's why that's a funny image. But, no, these things are crafted in judicial chop shops. And so, yeah, they want to get rid of Roe. But as Ron reminded us, they want to get rid of, and Marcia herself said she wants to get rid of, Griswold. And if you get rid of Griswold, you get rid of the right to privacy entirely. Where Republicans can, I don't know, empower cops to peep in your windows and the Fourth Amendment be damned, or knock down your door because they think somebody's having too much sexy time or having sexy time the wrong way. By the way, update, Jeremy in Vermont says, I did a rewind and she did. Oh my God, she did. She did, in fact, say Amy COVID Barrett. I'm sure it was a slip of the tongue. I rewound a few times and she definitely did. Oh, I hope she did. That should be good for some serious brooga from the right wing hate machine. Well, when you vote, to give more rights to a goddamn plague than a woman's control over her reproductive system, somebody's liable to make a slip of the tongue and call you Amy COVID Barrett. But oddly enough, this isn't about either Amy COVID Barrett. Or Marsha. No, enter Mike Brown. You know, like in Ava. The maggot senator from Talibandiana. He was on a conference call with a bunch of reporters, and it was reported by the Times of Northwest Indiana. And he was asked, what he'd like to see the Supreme Court fix. Here it comes, Ron. In the Times of Northwest Indiana story, they write, Brown initially limited his claim to the national right to abortion established by the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision he hopes the current, more conservative Supreme Court will overturn in coming months when it rules in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. See, that Judge Jackson's running abortion clinics. No. But, you know, with these maggots, there's always a but. When asked by the Times, Brown admitted there are many Supreme Court decisions he believes improperly established federal rights that would be better handled on a state-by-state basis. Including, here it is, Ron, here it is, Loving versus Virginia. That legalized interracial marriage, and Griswold versus Connecticut in 1965, establishing a right to privacy concerning contraceptive use. And then he didn't, and then Mike Brown didn't say, oh, I screwed up. I didn't mean. He said, we're better off having states manifest their points of view rather than homogenizing it across the country as Roe v. Wade did. I mean, I'm fine with interracial couples getting married in one state. Even if another state doesn't recognize their marriage, this should be something where the expression of individual states are able to weigh in on these issues through their own legislation, through their own court systems. Quit trying to put the federal government in charge. Repeal the 13th Amendment now. I mean, that's the next step. And it goes without saying that if he thinks that Loving versus Virginia should be overturned, well, goodbye, Obergefell. This little radio community has a right to be justifiably proud about the shit that we've gotten right over the course of so many years. But I don't know about you, but it feels a little lonely too. To get things right while the rest of the country continues to use the turn of phrase that my dear friend Joe Bajant came up with so many years ago, continues waltzing at the doomsday ball. So not to put too fine a point on it, but let's say there's an interracial couple. Let's say their names are, I don't know, Slappy and Ginny. And they're very happily interracially married in Washington, D.C. But if Taliban Deanna wants to ban interracial marriage, well, then Slappy and Ginny's marriage doesn't even exist in Taliban Deanna. Of course, it was Loving versus Virginia that got the whole damn thing struck down, the idea of banning, using the vast powers of the state to ban an act of matrimony, to tell people who they can love based upon the color of their skin. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet? That if a case with the power to repeal Loving versus Virginia were to come before the Supreme Court of the United States, if it was properly supported by the various and sundry right-wing MAGA chop shops, what do you want to bet? Slappy would write the majority opinion rendering his own marriage null and void in whatever state chose so to do. I'll bet you wouldn't take the bet. I'm betting he would. I'll bet you won't take the bet against. Because you know you'd lose. God, these people. And, of course, Mike Brown is still kind of dealing with the fallout from the fact that he gave his Senate campaign millions of dollars from his business. That is, in case anybody was wondering, illegal AF. Well, you know, he Mike Brown said, I don't know how it happened, but it must have been an accountant, and I can't find him. He's vanished. After he said the accountant had vanished, reporters found the accountant in about 3 minutes. So there it is. We've said it all along. And again, if Mike Brown has been given the talking point, so too has Marsha, goodness, Blackburn. And so has Josh Hawley. And so has Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. And so has John Cornholio and creepy old Chuck Grassley. Because say whatever else you want to about the Republican Party, they march lockstep, with real aplomb . God, quit trying to put the federal government in charge. Yeah, who needs a federal government anyway, right? I feel like I want to be shocked. But by the same token, I'm not even a little bit shocked. This is par for the course. They are in break now. Theoretically, they will be back in about a minute or so. That probably means we'll be back in 5 to 10. Minutes. It's not a sentence. And in the meantime, if you'd like to do some conversating about this, you are welcome to jump in. I would. I'm certainly open to that. Yeah, repeal Loving. Steve in New York says, "Then there goes Brown." That was me, Steve. I came up with so far out in front of the curve, we think we're on straight road. But, yeah. But it's lonely. It's lonely out there. And by the way, we have consensus. Bill of Rick says, Senator Hirono obviously called Justice Barrett as Amy COVID Barrett because she's a listener to The Horn. Is she a contributor to the show? What about George Soros? Little Sheila Rue tells me that Soros is...
Great big money check.
Is about to land in your bank account to help pay for your Gulfstream 5, your Maybach, and your Sikorsky S-92 helicopter. $17.7 million. I took a powder on the helicopter because I just don't like rotary wing aircraft. I'm waiting until I can get a vertical takeoff and landing jet. And by the way, I've said this before. I'm kind of on a personal mission. You know, one of the reasons we know how to pronounce Latin is because Cicero left us the guide. And never, ever, ever, ever in the entire history of the Latin language did the letter I get pronounced I. It was either eh or e. So, starry, S-T-A-R-R-Y. No, stare, S-T-A-R-E. D-E-C-I-S-I-S is not decisis. You'd think they'd finally up at Harvard and Yale and whatnot. Stop teaching bad. I mean, they got a classics department up there. They got really good Latin teachers. Have none of them ever reached out to the law school and said, "Will you stop making your students sound like they wouldn't that they don't know a lick?" Well, maybe they didn't take the class. Never mind. That C is a K sound. De qui sis. Or de kissis, or de kissis, or de kissis. But the one thing it is not is decisis. I'd like to live long enough to one day see a Supreme Court nominee, preferably someone who won't be some Federalist Society wild-eyed jurisprudential hack, pronounce it correctly. SCOTUS redecides. Lee in New York says, when will they get around to reversing Brown versus Board of Education? After all, separate is fine because we're all Americans and we're all equal. And that's one of the things I see in the great Leah Thomas debate. What we need is for the transes to just have their own stupid little league. So if you understand the development of, well, women's college sport, women's sports were created as a ghetto so girls and women could engage in sporting activities. And women have been forever just right in there. And yet, curiously, to the best of my knowledge, there's no girls' high school wrestling. That's why that one brilliant and talented young woman whipped the ass of every boy in her weight class in North Carolina and won the North Carolina State Wrestling High School Wrestling Championship in her weight class last year. Not a word from the TERFs and the transphobes about that. Nope. Crickets. And so they want to create a sub-ghetto for trans athletes when a high school with 500 people in it might have 500 high school students might have 5 trans kids. Well, I guess you could maybe muster. You could play pony or around the world maybe I don't know. Maybe you could play hot box with a couple of ball gloves and. Yeah, I know. Well, hey, Thomas, what's happening? How are you?
Hey, Robin, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine as frog's hair.
I have
and you're echoing back at me.
I'm echoing back at you. Let me see if I can fix that. Hold on one second. What about now? Can
check,
you hear me?
Check. Nope, still doing it.
Still doing it?
Yeah, I'm coming back at me.
Let's see if I can do it this way. Now.
Yeah?
America?
Check. Nope, still America? Doing it. Still doing it.
Skype is doing this to me all the time lately, and I don't know why.
Do you have your playback going?
No, I don't. I don't have my headphones in, though. That would be the probably why. Let me call you right back on my other phone.
Okay. Bye. It just gets really confusing when the talkback is there. Yeah, you're right, Steve. The goddess of irony did intercede with Senator Rono, Amy COVID Barrett. Okay, once more unto the breach. Let's try again, Thomas.
Hi. Sorry.
Oh, all better.
Yeah, I called you on my cell and did it that way. I'm still fighting with technology. It hates me. Skype does and Windows 11 do not like each other whatsoever. So I apologize for that profusely because I feel bad. And I wanted to touch base with you to apologize for anybody who's been trying to listen to my show. I had an infection over the weekend.
Yeah.
It was pretty horrifying, and I couldn't sleep or eat or talk. So this is the first day that I feel better. The only problem is I look like I got punched in the face.
The hell kind of infection did you get?
I had an old tooth that swelled up real bad.
Oh.
Unfortunately, yes. And it's my own fault, and I know it's my fault. So no, don't. No pity here, please. It's just really, this is why I don't do camera a lot. People need to remember to try and get better care of themselves. So they don't have issues like I do, because literally it was caused by a damn French fry. A French fry did me in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so damn embarrassing at this point in my life, too. But I wanted to call, one, to apologize for that, but to say that I'll be back on the air tomorrow, and we'll be back on YouTube as well, although it frightens the bejesus out of me. That being said, this trans sports thing.
Yeah.
Have you talked about Charlie Kirk yet? Or was it Charlie Kirk? Or let me see who it was. I got, which one was it? Yeah, Charlie Kirk. He called Rachel Levine a man.
That was Charlie Kirk. And then he was just parroting Ken Paxton of Texas.
Yeah, yeah. These people are... just despicable, and they talk about freedom and rights and individuality and all this stuff, but they're so scared of somebody like you, like having your freedom, having your individuality, and doing all the things that they proclaim they love, and it's so nauseating because it drives me batshit crazy that these people just don't like understand that this is not okay to behave like a jackass. The person feels how they feel, and that's who they are. And just because they have it in their pants doesn't mean anything otherwise. I mean, it should be as simple as that.
Well, I mean, I'm going to stay away from the TMI portion of that statement, but fair enough.
You know, I you heard about Dave Rubin, right? I hope.
Help me.
Okay, he and his husband work for the Blaze, and they decided that they would get artificially inseminate a woman with their eggs.
Sperm
and the egg.
Yeah, surrogate pregnancy.
Surrogate pregnancy. Well, now all the right wing is flipping out because I guess they all realize that Dave Rubin is gay and married. And right now,
was it a secret?
I don't know. I never understood Dave Rubin's appeal to anyone when he was on TYT or The Blaze. So you got me. I guess he's kind of cute, but you can't rest on those laurels for how long? I don't know.
Wrong girl to ask about something like that.
But like now the right, like, Sam Levin did, was that his name? Or Mark Levin? Not the one who was the liberal. Mark Levine, thank you. Did a clip with Beck interviewing Dave Rubin and basically chastising him for making a choice, but saying how he understands and trying to do this like father figure, I'm here to help you type of thing, while still admonishing him for being gay and having kids. Because you know what they're worried about? They're worried about the kids going to come out as non-binary in 18 years. You know, which is doesn't mean a hell of a hill of beans to them, but indoctrination of the children. And so that is a whole thing going on in right-wing world that they have to contend with. And I just find it funny that Dave Rubin thought that this would be a platform for him that would be, like, open to any of this as a life choice. I just don't understand how people can make these choices when they have kids and do shit like that, Robin.
Well, I mean, it's the old thing about the scorpion. You know, you knew I was a scorpion all along.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't have any other way to make it out other than that.
I mean, I suppose I should feel sympathy for a right winger who suddenly who is non-gender or sexuality conforming.
Mm-hmm.
Who suddenly finds out that they are not welcome in the community that aligns with their political philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm supposed to feel bad about that. I'll let you know when I do.
I don't, because, I mean, unless you're going in with blinders, how do you not know? How do you not know who these people are? I mean, for Pete's sake, this is the whole reason why I got out of the community, as far as conservatives go, because they were so bigoted and racist and everything else that I wasn't. You know,
it surprises me just from a different, slightly different tack. There are a lot of members of the younger generation.
Yeah, I'm a whippersnapper. Just yelling at, get off my lawn.
But there are a lot of people who have been sucked into incelery. I think that's a word. It is now. Who have been sucked into various forms of right wing hate.
Yeah.
And because of a new generation of broadcasters, primarily YouTubers,
mm-hmm.
they have been saved. They've been redeemed.
Yep.
And those and the people who do that deserve all the credit in the world. And at least two of them are trans. One of them is Natalie Wynn, ContraPoints, who has spent the last God knows how many years brilliantly disassembling right-wing talking points. And then there's Abigail Thorne, mm-hmm. also known as Philosophy Tube. And she does something similar. And it's really weird to read in the comments where they say, you know, I was going down this path, and finally now I have seen the error of my ways. And they go from, it's wild, they go from being, you know, a hardcore right-wing, like Alex Jones types.
Yep.
And they swing all the way across the political spectrum to being sort of ultra-lefty. And I'd rather have them ultra-lefty than ultra-righty.
Absolutely, any day of the week.
And it's kind of hopeful. By the way, there was some good news. You remember back on March the 11th, a trial court in Texas told Ken Paxton and Vlad Abbott to go F themselves with their little attack on parents of trans kids and investigating trans parents for child abuse. Well, they didn't. Ken Paxton, the indicted felon, didn't like that result, so they appealed it to the Texas Court of Civil Appeals. And today, the Texas Court of Civil Appeals said, go fuck yourself, Ken. And so they upheld the temporary restraining order, again, finding that the trial court did not err when it said that the plaintiffs in this case are likely to prevail at trial. So now it'll go to the Texas Supreme Court, where I don't know what happens there.
Well,
but eventually this thing will get tried.
Yeah. This is what their game plan was all along with that $675,000 donation that the trans hate group made that Right Wing Watch talked about. They want to, I can't remember the guy's name, Trevor or Theodore or Buckface, I don't remember. He basically manipulated it for Greg Abbott to go and do this damn silly thing in this damn silly way. And it was all a bribe, basically.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a good dollar.
Yeah. You know, I wish FYI Nation had $675,000 to raise. I, oh my God, the things I could do for you, for Tara, for Brad, and anybody else who needed it on the left. I would be so happy to be George Soros of the left for a day with $675,000.
I know. We got a little $10 challenge on the table, and we're still trying to get that met to get us, because tomorrow we're going to be like near $1,300 in the hole. But look, that's who we are, and that's where we operate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully, we can grow and we can change and keep changing minds, and you know, that's why I do it. And do the show I do. Thank you again for putting up with my technical issues today's show and the last show you came on with me.
Oh no, when I did your show, that wasn't you, that was me.
Well, the technical issues were totally all me. But the allergies wasn't.
No, the internet crash was mine too.
Oh yeah, well that's true too. I forgot about that part. I was blanking it out as a mean spirit. But you're definitely welcome to come on another time. And I want to thank you for everything you do.
Well, thank you, Thomas. That's really sweet.
Thank you for being there to provide me with a little bit of sanity like Tara Devlin does. Because, oh my God, there are days, and I know you see my Facebook posts. You may not always comment, but you definitely make yourself known when you do. Because, yeah. So, especially this past weekend. But thank you, and I really appreciate everything.
Oh, you are more than welcome. And you know, anytime you need me to pop over, I'm more than happy to do so.
Thank you so much, Robin. You have a great day and stay safe. Okay.
All right. You take care, Thomas. Bye now.
Bye now.
That's our pal Thomas from FYINation.com. And yeah, the Chantel crashed like a, I don't know, like a Russian helicopter. The day I tried to do, and that was, well, that was also the same day that I was feeling like warmed over crap. But I don't think it affected the internet. Well, I thought Dadgummit. I apologize for the mistake. I thought I was getting it right. Hey, Robin, love the show. Just a note on pronouncing my name. 22nd day of the month. Sponsor. Colin with a short O. Colin, not Colin or Cullen. Thanks a ton. I like your Starbucks cup name, too, Colin. I think we've had a... We had another... Sorry, I sincerely apologize for getting that wrong. Excuse you, Robin, says John in central Pennsylvania. Don't you mean Vlad Asbot? Yes, Vlad Asbot, that's him. Oh, this should be fun. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is engaged in a colloquy with Dick Durbin, and Dick Durbin doesn't look like he likes it.
Else Democrats have that Republicans do not, from Judge Jackson's not to my knowledge. Record.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question about this? I want to be sure I understand. The handout that I just saw, the White House gave to some of us earlier today, but not all of us?
It was available, I'm told. The information was available to anyone who requested it. The White House...
So you had to be clairvoyant and know they had it?
No, not clairvoyance. I think it's pretty obvious, Senator.
That's called paying attention, Foghorn.
You would know it after Senator Hawley launched his attack on the judge. At that point, all of this information became relevant to countering...
So I would be expected to say, geez, after Senator Hawley asked questions, I better call the White House and see if they can help me research this? That's not realistic.
That's not the point. The point I'm getting to is, and you know as a good lawyer, what you do during discovery, I wasn't aware of the fact that this was available. The White House requested it, received it. We asked for a copy, and within an hour or two, you received the same copy.
Let me finish. When did y'all get your copy?
Sometime today.
Sometime today. That covers a lot of ground, Richard.
I don't have any personal knowledge of this. I'll be honest with you.
You don't have any personal what?
Knowledge.
Does your staff?
Does your staff know?
I haven't.
They're standing behind you.
I've talked to them earlier.
Mr. Chairman, I'm so sorry. I just don't want to make this a partisan issue if it doesn't have to be. My staff just says we just got it 10 minutes ago as well, so I'm very upset. I joined Ted Cruz.
Good.
Mr. Chairman.
That's an alliance that's well known.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Mr. Chairman. I do think it's significant. We've had now referenced some pre-sentence reports, and we've got this material that references recommendations made by the Office of Adult Probation and Parole.
We don't have pre-sentence reports.
Well, okay, but we've got critical information that is contained within them. The recommendation made by the Office of Adult Probation and Parole in these cases is something that's drawn from the pre-sentence report. It seems to me that if we're going to have a jot-for-jot selective incorporation of information in there, we ought to have access to the whole report. So I respectfully request that we be given access to these reports. They've been made now by a member of the committee in reliance on information that we haven't had access to, and I think we need to be given those. You can't.
Senator, I'd like to draw this to a conclusion. I can tell you what I know. And
well, so would I.
And here's the point. Most of this information was published in the Washington Post 5 days ago. All right? This is not confidential information. When the Hawley attack on the judge started, we requested more information, the White House did, and then shared it with us within the day, and you now have the same copy that we have. End of story.
Is it fair for you to characterize Senator Hawley's questions or the questions raised by any of us as an attack? It's not a personal attack. This is
We've raised a legitimate
question regarding... sentencing regarding the most heinous crimes imaginable.
Oh, come on.
So these are legitimate questions, Mr. Chairman. Don't call them attacks.
Well, I can just tell you, I have characterized them as attacks and other things as well.
Can we add in sleazy? Can we modify attacks with sleazy?
And, you have all the information we have.
So Mr. Chairman, enough? For example, in the questioning about the Hawkins case, Judge Jackson said she relied on the factors, relied on probation's recommendation. We just found out in what you just handed us that in the Hawkins case, the probation office recommended 18 months, and Judge Jackson only sentenced him to 3 months. That's you can get more than that almost for a speeding ticket. And
Senator,
this committee, given that she raised it as the basis for her sentence, it is highly relevant to the committee's analysis to see what the pre-sentence report says. Why did the probation office recommend 18 months, and she only sentenced to 3 months?
19. case of U.S. versus Hawkins, a sex offender had multiple images of child porn over 18. Sentencing guidelines called for sentence up to 10 years. Judge Jackson sentenced the perpetrator to only 3 months in prison.
Look, those facts we knew. It's the probation recommendation. We don't dispute that the guidelines said 10 years and she sentenced him to 3 months.
Sorry, I didn't finish reading it. The government and probation both recommended sentences well below the guidelines. The government recommended 24 months, probation recommended 18 months, and defense recommended 1 day. I'm telling you, it was published in a newspaper.
Now, well, I can't help what is leaked to the newspaper or not. This committee, you keep referencing discovery. This is not litigation. This is a committee of the United States Senate where both sides of the aisle have a right to access to the record, and we're carrying out our constitutional duty of advice and consent.
I will tell you this. For some reason, your side didn't request the information.
But how would we know to request? So I'm hereby requesting all other information you magically have that you haven't told us you have.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
So noted.
Wait a minute.
We'll continue with the questioning now.
And we're Professor requesting the pre-sentence reports in particular.
You magically have. Professor Spicoli wants to be heard from.
You don't have any
dick!
Yeah.
Judge, I'd like to talk about crime. In 2019, there were about 16,000 murders in America. In 2020, there were more than 20,000.
Oh, good. It's bobble-throated Tom Cotton.
2021 data isn't complete, but we know many cities have reached record levels of murder, including Philadelphia, Atlanta, and Milwaukee. At the same time...
Now, Tom, they will withhold your sweet NRA rubles if you talk about why the crime's gone up. Proliferation of firearms and all of that shit.
I think it's safe to say there's a surge in crime, especially...
No, let's check in with Steve real quick. Hey, Steve.
Hey there, how are you?
I'm good, you?
You know, I have to say, on the COVID Barrett thing, I was sitting at a McDonald's drinking a soda, and she said it, and I actually, my jaw dropped, and I thought, did she just say COVID Barrett?
Yeah, I thought maybe I just, you know, she was just kind of, I thought she was just kind of eliding or something, but no.
No, she did.
Yep.
I cannot stand these people. They don't give two shits about this. And you know what? And first of all, and then, you know, Senator Booger Eater says that, well, we didn't know that the parole officer recommended 18 months. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, we did. Because she said that. And Josh, you know, Trader Hawley said that, number one. Number two, and this thing where she says, I don't remember what she said, I'm sorry this happened to you. She's not apologizing to the kid. She's saying to the kid, I'm sorry that you at 18 years old have made a mistake like this. So
that is going to dog you for the rest of your
life.
Yeah.
That's what she was saying.
And you know, the probation report is, I believe, I don't know, I could be wrong. But rest assured, if Josh Hawley could have shown the pictures in the hearing, he would have.
You know, I'm sitting there listening to that, and I'm like, what is the fucking obsession? You think he didn't? Oh,
they get off on it.
I don't want
to. Like I said, every one of these goddamn Republicans, I would dearly love to see their browser histories.
Absolutely. And you may tell you something, every time, how many times did he say pedophile? You said he's not a pedophile. You said, I know I'm very much a nerd here. Technically, first of all, assuming it was, you know, prepubescent, nearly 8-10 year olds. Those are not. That's not pedophilia.
Well, it's child pornography, and child pornography has an entirely separate and distinct. And you know this as a lawyer, a separate and distinct set of elements.
But the point is this was. As I think I emailed you, I can't remember if I emailed or if I just thought about it. This had everything to do with getting their sound bites, stoking the rubes, getting the money. They are not interested in governing. They don't care. They care about money and power. That's all they care about. That's all this is about.
Well, the two go hand in hand, and the best way to acquire both of them is to do the bidding of one's right-wing masters. The money, you know, we Bernie did such a good job starting way back before 2016 of talking about the 1% and how the vast amount of wealth in this country is controlled by a tiny fraction of the population. But I don't know if we went far enough, Steve, because we need to talk about what they want. You know, for instance, you know, there are outfits out there that could not simply could not care less about who swims for what team. But to the extent that something like that can be used to leverage them into the right-wing camp, to do the real bidding that they want, to let American corporations and any other corporations, for that matter, run roughshod over ordinary working class Americans, then they'll sit idly by and watch it happen. And some of them are even kind of grossed out about it. I mean, consider the Koch brothers, one of whom is now dead. They didn't give a damn about two guys getting married or two girls getting married. They cared about amassing wealth and power, as you pointed out. But it worked for them to get people all hopping mad so that they could get them to vote for the people who would actually do their Koch brothers' bidding. By the way, the Koch brothers have announced that they will not, by God, cease operations in Mother Russia.
Isn't that how Daddy Koch made a bunch of...
That's where Daddy Koch made his first money. Working for Stalin, and he became an absolute anti-communist devotee when Stalin stiffed him out of a little bit of cash. But yeah.
This is disgusting. It's disgusting to me. Because the rubes look at this like, yeah, that Josh Hawley, that guy, he's on my side. He's fighting against them elitists. That guy from Harvard and that other guy from Harvard, Cruz, and that other guy from Harvard, Braun. They're all fighting against them elitists. And that fucking corn pone Kennedy.
Oxford. And you know what I found interesting is this morning, lo and behold, of all people, Ben Sasse, that new and different kind of Republican, same as the old and not different kind of Republican, actually called out Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone. He said, my dear friend, Senator Kennedy of Louisiana, who talks like he's a real rube while he's picking your pocket. He said that. Like, well, son of a gun, look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Quiet part out loud. But I'm disgusted also by, I mean, I'm disgusted by the inherent racism in all of this. I mean, there's live questioning going on. We need some time to go over Lady G's behavior from this morning. It was disgusting. Judge Jackson... I know you were a person of deep and abiding faith. What faith is that? And you could see that she was kind of taken aback. She was like, Protestant?
Yeah, she probably wanted to say, none of your fucking business.
And he said, what kind? And she said, non-denominational?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, so would you be able to fairly judge a Catholic? Well, you know who can't get fairly judged in this country, Steve?
Blacks.
Faithless people.
Faithless people, yeah.
So, please, someday can we... I know, but dare to dream. Someday, can we please have a faithless person on the court? It, by definition, that will not be a Republican. Because they got to bark and grunt and hoot and show their religious bona fides and pray loudly in the streets like the Pharisees they are.
Yep.
if they want the job.
I'd also love to see a person that we did that we didn't know what the person whether the person had faith or what they were what it was because they said it's not your business.
Well, I mean, that's what I wanted to say. Senator, are you imposing a religious test for federal office on me? Because I would think somebody who spent who had a cup of coffee in law school and lawyered for the Air Force would know that that's strictly banned under the Constitution of the United States. You know, right here.
He doesn't care. Well, you know what? I just want to call in real quick before my ire gets up. I'm gonna step off. So if you want to listen to more,
You're flummoxed. Flummoxed.
Yeah, not much leaves me speechless. This shit does. Because I was sitting there listening to Hawley, and
You know what's coming. They've telegraphed what's coming, and then you watch it happen, and you're still gobsmacked by the fact that they've actually got the brass to do it. And. But now they've said it out loud that it's not like speculation. You know, we asserted it as theory for nearly 20 years that their real goal was Griswold, and now they're saying it out loud. Make no bones about it. I mean, to overturn Griswold and Loving versus Virginia, Steve, would amount to, and lawyer language, constructive secession. Constructive is always a dangerous word in the law when you put it in front of something else, like constructive fraud.
Yeah.
But this would be constructive secession. Because it would mean that there would be, just imagine Griswold gets overturned. You think there's going to be a flurry of bills in the Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas legislatures enshrining the right to privacy? If you do, you're on something. And by the way, I will tell you now that I asked Annette to please load the Thorazine dart blowgun. In case, Marsha, goodness, Blackburn showed up, but she may not be displaying her profound ignorance until like 9 or 10 o'clock tonight. So maybe we'll just be watching a movie or something like that.
You can escape that. But listen, I'm going to step off because I'm getting.
All right, you take care of yourself and be good now.
I'll talk to you soon, okay? Take care now.
All right, see ya. Bye. I understand why Steve's flummoxed. It is viscerally shocking to see it in practice. As to Dave Rubin, which Thomas was talking about, Dave announced he and his partner's pregnancies last week. He's been holding his homosexuality close to the vest. There's been considerable backlash to him coming out. He is, however, blaming the left for the backlash on the left, not the fact that the people he works for are anti-gay and are particularly against gay parentage. He's always called himself a classical liberal, whatever the fuck that means. If you've ever listened to him, you quickly realize he doesn't know shit from Shinola. I was confused when Thomas brought him up because the only Rubin I could come up with was Rick Rubin and, you know, those Johnny Cash records he produced. And it was like, not that guy. No. Yeah, I don't know how you go from the Young Turks to what. Never mind. But, you know, they're out there. The self-haters. Obviously, he's a self-hating gay man. Internalized homophobia, I guess it would be the technical term. But, you know, out there on YouTube, there's a girl named Blair White trans, and all she does is the bidding of the right wing. Refers to the gender confirmation surgery that she had as her wound. And yet is apparently married to a straight guy, I think. I mean, the level of cognitively dissonant hoops you have to leap through to be a self-hater is absolutely astonishing. And, well, they're in the same camp with Slappy Thomas and Candy Owens. And, daggummit, we have Jesse Lee Peterson, Kate Jenner. Yeah, Kate, when she was running for governor of California, she was going to find out who the real trans were if they wanted to play sports. Jesus. Let's check back in with the hearing.
Congress prescribes.
I understand. You were making policy, though, at the Sentencing Commission, and you're implementing changes to sentencing guidelines. So my question again is, do you believe that resentencing years after a conviction tends to reduce sentence lengths?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Obviously,
not your fault.
Resentence, you're giving the judge another opportunity to look at the circumstances in light of the changed penalties. Sometimes the judge in that new situation will keep the same penalty. A resentencing is just an opportunity for the judge to reevaluate in light of the changed circumstances.
Okay. Almost without exception, retroactively weakening sentencing laws and guidelines lets harden criminals out early. I always hear the argument. I hear it from some of the senators on this panel. I heard a version of it from you earlier, that each case is going to go before a judge, and it won't be an automatic release because each judge is going to assess the facts and hear the arguments. In 2014, you said that judges would not likely reduce the sentences in the vast majority of cases if sentencing guidelines for drug trafficking were reduced. I think you missed that one, Judge. Since 2014, when retroactive reduction took effect, approximately two-thirds of all convicted drug traffickers who asked for early release got it. That's 31,614 hardened drug traffickers back on the streets. More than 7,500 of those hardened drug traffickers use weapons in their crimes. So that means that only one-third of these drug traffickers who sought to have retroactive reduction of their sentence were denied. Judges, one-third, a vast majority.
Senator, it's hard for me to answer questions about these numbers because I'm trying to understand whether this is a retroactive release that was a result of the Sentencing Commission's actions or Congress's. Congress made a decision about retroactive reductions in drug penalties. So I'm just not sure what.
But Judge, in both cases, we always hear the argument, whether it's from members of Congress to include senators on this committee or the Sentencing Commission, that we shouldn't worry. There's going to be individualized case-by-case determination.
And that is my experience. That's when there is a retroactive change. So what happens is that whether it's the guidelines that are changed or the laws that are changed, which happens in Congress, there is a subsequent determination as to whether or not to apply that retroactively, apply that change, so that both the people who get convicted of that penalty moving forward and the people who have already been convicted, both of them get the benefit of the change if the determination is made to make it retroactive. Under that circumstance where you're talking about a penalty change applied to prior people, each one of those prior people goes back before a judge. And a judge, usually the sentencing judge in the first instance, will reevaluate whether or not to, this is generally, there are some exceptions, but generally speaking, the judge will reevaluate whether or not to give that person the benefit of the change. This is an individual assessment. That's what Congress requires in every sentence. And ultimately, one that benefits all of us under the law, because judges are being asked to look at these cases and not make just generalized determinations.
So the 2014 comment was specifically about the Sentencing Commission, but generally, whether it's in front of the commission or the Congress, we always hear this argument that judges are going to make these individualized cases and not that many people will be released. I'll point out that of the one-third that were not reduced, the vast majority of those were not eligible. The percentage of cases in which a sentence is not reduced for public safety reasons because someone is viewed as too dangerous to release early is 1%. It's 1%. Judge, do you remember a man named Keith Young?
Yes.
Good. For the benefit of my colleagues, let me quickly cover the basics of his case. You sentenced him in 2018. Keith Young was a career criminal who had previously been convicted of trafficking cocaine. In 2017, he was running a drug business in his house where his children lived and was found with 2 1-kilogram bricks of heroin worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, along with a gun, ammunition, thousands of dollars in cash, and equipment to cut and package heroin for retail sale. The drug lab also confirmed that there was fentanyl in both bricks of heroin.
Not fentanyl?
And in one of the two bricks, there was actually more fentanyl than there was heroin.
Really?
While at the D.C. jail awaiting trial, Young bragged about his arrest and about how he was a kingpin. Those are his words, not mine. Kingpin.
We know that because Tom Bobblethroat Cotton is using his dick fingers.
Instructions on collecting drug money from people for him. The prosecutors filed a notice of Young's criminal history, which meant he faced a mandatory minimum of 20 years. You did not seem to like that, Judge. In fact, at his sentencing, you said, this is a quote, that you shared his frustration, that you couldn't give him a lighter sentence. I was shocked to see this in the transcript. I was also shocked that you apologized to this drug kingpin for having to follow the law. You literally said that you didn't think 20 years was fair. This is the quote. And for this, I am sorry. Mostly because I believe in second chances. You apologized to this career criminal, a drug kingpin, in his own words. He was not some low-level first-time drug offender who made a bad choice.
This would be funny if it wasn't so bad.
But in 2020, you got a second chance. After Young's sentence, Congress passed something called the First Step Act, which reduced sentences for serious drug traffickers with lengthy criminal records. During the pandemic, lots of criminals like Keith Young tried to twist the First Step Act's compassionate release provision, which was intended for terminally ill elderly inmates, to get early release and blame it on COVID. You had none of that. And
blame it.
You rightly said at his resentencing hearing, quote, COVID-19 is not only present in prisons. And you said that Young's past as a smoker and his claim of various other health issues did not entitle him to early release. If you had stopped there, I would have cited that as a great example of how you follow the law and made a well-reasoned decision. Unfortunately, you didn't stop there. You said in the resentencing that, quote, Congress did not make their changes under the First Step Act retroactive. But that if they had, then you could have given him a reduced sentence.
Good God, if looks could kill, Tom Cotton would go away in pieces in a basket.
And this is a quote, Judge. The court feels as though in this moment, per Mr. Young's compassionate release motion, the court is being called upon to evaluate the length of his sentence under the revised section of the law in the First Step Act. And so it is almost as if I am sentencing him today. And if I were to do so, he would face a sentence that would be well below the 240 months that Mr. Young received. And so for that reason, I will grant Mr. Young's motion. Judge Jackson, before you granted this fentanyl kingpin's motion to reduce his sentence,
now he's a fentanyl kingpin.
The victims from his case?
One more question and he'll be Hitler.
Senator, thank you for allowing me to address Mr. Young's situation.
I asked a simple question. Did you contact the victims in his case or not?
Senator, Mr. Young was not released. His sentence was reduced, and I did not contact the victims in his case because there were no victims. He committed a crime, a drug crime. There were no identifiable victims in his case.
Drug crime is not a victimless crime. 100,000 Americans were killed by overdoses.
Understood, Senator, but there was no one to contact because there were no identifiable...
Judge, you just acknowledge that you did not release him. You're right, you didn't release him. He filed a motion for compassionate release. You denied that rightly. But you reduced his sentence. He didn't file a motion to reduce his sentence. He wasn't...
Meanwhile, coming from Yoda, colossal waste of time Tom Cotton is. Oh, thank you, Matt. And before she blows the gasket, let's check in with Tracy. Breathe. Breathe, Tracy. Breathe. Letting go now.
The simple victory.
Letting go now.
No, see, this is righteous, you know, this is hellfire right now, because I didn't listen to the handmaid confirmation hearing because I do have, you know, I have some things that I'm trying to do about self-care, but I did listen to the sexual, you know, the possible sexual predator, or no, not possible, the sexual predator, better known as Brett Kavanaugh's hearing. And I just don't remember any of this kind of stuff happening to him, even from the Democrats. I remember him crying. I remember him saying, I like you. But all this, like when he said drugs is not a victimless crime. And granted, it isn't to a certain extent, but like you said, how am I going to call victims when I don't know who they are? And who was I supposed to call? Oh my God, this right here is some, I can't even, you know, trying to come up with the words.
Do it in Latin. Do it in Latin, Tracy. On three. On three. One, two, three. Hic mater copulator.
Hic mater copulator. Yes. So this is, I know what the game is. I know what they're trying to do. And like we said yesterday, it's basically to get, you know, I can only imagine the fundraising
Absolutely. And this is one long Willie Horton ad.
Mm-hmm. This is Willie Horton. This is any other, you know, Willie, you know, oh my God, Willie Horton, oh my God, Huey, oh my God, Angela Davis, you know.
You remember the New Yorker cover that showed Michelle Obama as Angela Davis?
Yes.
With the big natural?
With it, you know, she don't wear her hair that way.
No, it was actually a story about the right wing overreaction and et cetera. But you know, that's
right.
You know, we lived with that for 8 years, you know, these assholes calling her Michael Obama, swearing that she was a trans woman.
Yeah.
But it's pretty, it's pretty obvious that with all of these dumb bastards, bastard is not gendered. With all these dumb bastards, she can think them, Judge Jackson can think them under the table.
That's the, and they're, that
and they,
part.
And they, I mean, ha- this woman, and they hate that
and they hate
most
it.
Of all. bad enough getting beat up by a girl.
But a black girl and a brilliant, because yeah. It's, so she's like, you think I'm gonna fall? I mean, she's like, what? You think I'm gonna fall for the okie doke? Do you really think you're gonna trip me up on this bullshit? Come on, player. Seriously.
I know.
Seriously, it's like. Because see, they keep just. Where's the question? Nobody has yet to ask a
substantive
adjective for question. Thank you, substantive question. You know, I want some real caboonses up there. You know, give me some. You know, because this is just. It's like, come on. Really? And pulling out, see, this is what kills me. This is how they play their game when they pull out all these numbers and these facts, these quote unquote facts and figures. You know what I'm saying? It's like, well, and you know, this many people. And to me, I'm like, if I were her, because this is basically, you know, they're basically writing a really, really long, really bad essay. Cite your source. Where did you get your information from? Did you?
Well, that's what she did to Rafi Alito earlier today. He wanted.
Oh, good.
She sits on the board of the Georgetown. I don't know Georgetown. Elementary, I don't know what the name, it's a private school, of course, costs a fortune to go there, but she sits on the board, and one of the women who introduced her yesterday is the board president, and Rafi Alito took issue with a text that is apparently used with children as young as five that teaches children that if they say or do a racist thing, the appropriate thing to do is apologize for it. And apparently this is something up with which Rafi Alito will not put it. No. And going on at her about teaching critical race theory in the schools. Hang on. Cory Booker is laughing about something, so... hang on a minute.
Oh, yeah, we got to hear that.
Something, and I'd like to just put it this way. On a scale from 1 to 10, how deep is your faith that I won't ask that question?
You're asking me you won't ask me?
I'm just joking.
Okay.
I won't ask you that. But I do want to go through some of the things.
Which
that,
is a burn on Lady G.
On top line. And forgive me, I don't want to dwell too much, but some of it I found today... just to me really didn't hold water. And I want to start with my friend and colleague, Ted Cruz, who is my friend. He's a Texan. One of my favorite Texans is Brene Brown's, who says it's hard to hate up close, so pull people in. And a lot of times in this culture of tribal politics, the reality is we know each other. We get to know each other over years. And I've had the privilege of working with Ted on a lot of really
good
policy.
About to burn him to the ground.
So I went back to my office and re-listened to his questioning of you about critical race theory, and he referenced your speech, which I hadn't read. You Harvard folks are so well focused on these things, but I read your speech, and I was very surprised. Ted had a very big chart. I think he needs to give Senator Whitehouse some advice on charts. Senator Whitehouse, this was very small. It was almost as if they were proportionate to their state sizes.
Easy there, New Jersey.
Mr. Chairman, I would request that my colleagues in the Democratic Party would stop interrupting me. but he talked about your speech, and when I read your speech, there's a couple things that jumped out. First of all, he acknowledged it was a very powerful speech, very moving speech about extraordinary black women. I have a criticism. Your mother was not in it, but I will leave that alone. but There's some things he honed in on, almost as if they seemed to be accusations.
Homed, goddammit, homed.
We have a saying in New Jersey, I felt it was all hat and no cattle. And so he said that you called the woman who wrote the 1619 project, that you called her provocative. That's not a compliment necessarily if you call someone provocative, is it?
No,
I mean, I think Ted Cruz is very provocative. And that doesn't mean I agree with what he's saying, his philosophy. Ouch. Doesn't mean I agree with his statements. But he pointed out you also called the author acclaimed. She won a Pulitzer Prize, correct?
She did.
In journalism. So she is acclaimed.
She is.
But in nowhere are you heralding her as this is reflective of your philosophy. That's true, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So I don't understand that at all. Part of his chart also was a lot of ellipses, skipping out things. But you mentioned critical race theory when you're talking about policies in general. I actually went back to that talk, too, and I saw you threw everything in there. You were talking about psychology, economics, all different types of disciplines as touching upon the law. I think there was everything in there, I seem to be, except for astrology. But you understand that you were just listing a list of things that people could say touch the law. They weren't your philosophies at all.
Correct, Senator. And that speech was not related to what I do as a judge. That was talking about sentencing policy and all of the different academic disciplines that might relate to it.
Yeah, and then finally, we're entering an age that is surprising to me in American society, where lots of books are being banned and lots of talks about books being read. You're on the board of a private school, and you have no supervision or authority over what books the children read in a private school, correct?
Correct.
I really do appreciate that. Jumping really quickly to a lot of talk today about these child exploitation cases. And Senator Durbin, I think that actually Josh Hawley used the word attack when describing his own. So I don't understand what that point of sensitivity was. But I individual cases, and we've now heard about two, you've presided over as a judge more than 10, 15 cases?
I've presided over 14 cases that involve child sex crimes, but over my career as a trial judge, I've presided over more than 100.
Right. And cases are heavily fact specific, right?
That is true.
Did you remember all the facts of the case that Senator Hawley was?
I did not.
You did not, right? And the facts matter, right?
They do.
And as a judge, you're looking at all of the facts of the case, not just what might be talked about later or what people are honing in. You have to take everything into account and make a decision, correct?
Yes, that's what Congress has required judges to do.
Right. And just to clarify that Congress thing, because again, you went to this elite law school. I went to a gritty inner city law school, Yale. So you know this better than me, but it was actually 1984 that the sentencing laws, the sentencing standards were passed down, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, it was 1984. And then later in 2002 or three, things were updated. But that 1984 was before the internet completely. And I just want to clarify also the Booker decision.
Yes.
Could you just clarify for the record, because my mom might be watching, no relation to me whatsoever, correct?
So the Booker decision, which earlier I mentioned that I thought Justice Scalia wrote it. In fact, it was Justice Stevens.
Yes.
But Justice Scalia concurred, so he had a separate opinion, and he had written a previous decision that was very similar.
Yes.
The Booker decision made the guidelines, the sentencing guidelines, advisory.
Why? Why would the Supreme Court, joined by some of the most conservative members, why would they do that?
Well, they determined that, in essence, the Booker, that if the guidelines were mandatory, that it would violate the right to a jury trial, to have jurors decide every aspect of your sentencing.
Yeah, so, it's sort of the separation of powers, Sixth Amendment.
Yes.
This is really important.
Yes.
And so that gave judges latitude.
Yes.
Now, if you were falling out of the norm, and this is where you know, I've now read conservative periodicals looking at this line of attack. That's not a negative pejorative. Again, my colleague himself used it, but this line of attack on you. I've seen conservative papers, liberal papers, mainstream papers all say this doesn't hold water. And the reason is, and again, I, unlike White House and Cruz, I don't have a chart. I'm uncharted. But I would like to hold this up for you. You are well within the norm nationally for going below the sentencing guidelines because of this problem where...
Okay, we're kind of off into the weeds, but I just wanted to catch the at least a little bit of fun there. I had a note from Ron in Raleigh. I guess old Bobblethroat thinks you give out a receipt when you sell an 8-ball and get a contact number in case they're not satisfied with their purchase. Fuck me running. The problem is that the people they're playing to believe this shit. No one was concerned about the black truck driver that Ann's boy Neil wanted to freeze to death. I don't think he ever called him and apologized, and of course he didn't. And meanwhile, and this is a salient point, fentanyl victims. Matt in San Francisco says, being in recovery for 35 years, I will comfortably go out on a limb and say fentanyl users are not waiting by the phone to be contacted by a judge about a drug kingpin sentence. I wish we could speak plain. I wish we could speak plain English in these these theatrical set pieces. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, just listen to these. You know, these blowhards. It's time for a summit. Because again, they're playing to an audience. They're playing to who is it? Marveline and who?
Emery.
And they're matching Barker Lounges, and of course, you know, and these people who don't, I mean, I hate to say that people don't matter, but howsoever, I'm tired of being by, what is it, like 30% of the country?
Yeah.
You know.
Running the rest of us?
I'm running the rest of us. I mean, it's bad enough that the 1%, you know, the 1% is that control all the wealth. Okay, we got that part. But now we got these people, you know, who through Jerry, you know, just out and out cheating, you know, can't, you know, because people are like, yeah, we just can't have the night.
Well, at least you got one thing going for you, Tracy. Now that we got these white senators coming out and saying they want to overturn Griswold, and they want to overturn Loving versus Virginia.
Yeah, because that would make it so I can't. Because wait a minute, that means
they're going to have to. They're going to have to.
They're going to me and Dan.
They're going to have to overturn Obergefell too, though.
Right.
God. But I mean, the white folks are saying it out loud.
I mean, this is
we've known these white Republicans felt this way for a long damn time. I mean, hell. Some of them are probably still pissed off about guess who's coming to dinner.
Yeah, and they never actually kissed on screen.
No, well, they're mad about the Star Trek episode too. Even though extraterrestrial powers compelled the kiss between Kirk and Uhura.
Yeah. Right. It wasn't like they did it because
they
wanted some chocolate.
Yeah, they feel like their world is collapsing around them. You know, I made reference talking to our buddy Angelo from on Facebook, Angelo from the People's Republic of the Bronx, and I've said it before. I think it's an apt analogy. These people are mastodons who have stupidly wandered in to the tar pit. There's one of those near you, La Brea.
Yeah, that was they were all just running and. Stay there.
Once you do stay there, but you sink really slowly. You sink really slowly, and as you realize you're fucked, you start bellowing to an uncaring universe.
Yeah,
They know. They know. And all of this is their bellowing. But they're not going to stop the tide from coming in, to mix metaphors. And even...
Well,
go ahead.
The thing is,
even if they get to do their evil, it will eventually, you know, that moral arc of the universe that bends toward justice is going to keep bending.
I keep praying. And hoping and wishing and all that good stuff. It's very exhausting.
Yeah.
Being a black woman in this country. And, you know, watching KDJ is a masterclass in what a black woman has to go through, just to, you know, the fact that she has to prove her worth in front of all these worthless, shitless, trifling motherfuckers, is just, it is an assault. It's not an insult. It's an assault. She is being assaulted by these people.
Yeah, and Slappy said it was a high-tech lynching, because he was questioned about his predilection for sexual harassment.
Right. And so what is this?
Well, this is basically inferring that she herself is the child sexual abuser, that she herself is the drug kingpin.
Right, because black.
Right. I mean, I kept thinking about that thing that I've read over the years, that, you know, it's the other talk about how you have to work twice as hard to have half as much.
Yeah, and half as much is more than what we normally get anyway, so that part.
Right. But I tell you what, her mama and daddy are sitting there beaming, and her mama just chuckled a little bit. So I think she and Corey are having some fun.
And you know, Pops, and they're like, now her father's the attorney and her mother's the educator.
Right.
So you know they're sitting there going, nothing changes. Look at my baby. Look at all that she's accomplished. All that she has worked for. Everything that she has done in her life, you know, for those of us of faith, when she gets said, you know, well done, my good and faithful servant, the hope, you know. But see, what they don't know is that we, like, let's see, like, you know, y'all know my life, you know, this is what we call duty for action. From action. It's like, you know what? Because she's going to get confirmed.
I'm not going to put that or manifest it out there.
No. She's going to get confirmed.
Can you put some manifesting on Joe Manchin?
No, I can't go that far.
Well, then we still have to hope.
I mean, I know. Okay, well. Oh,
Jesus. Sorry. Little ray of sunshine. That's me.
What about Enema? What is she, you know, what are our chances with her?
I'm not near as worried about her as I am Joe. Because Joe don't like him some black or brown women.
No, he does not.
The only black people Joe Manchin likes are the ones that are covered in fucking coal dust.
Well, In Colton death. That part.
Yeah.
You know.
But no, seriously, I want to share your optimism.
I want so badly for this to be, because
Well, I mean, Lindsay crawled her today. Lindsay crawled her today because apparently she's some sort of wild-eyed leftist who's the darling of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol that secretly runs America, and he was pissing and moaning about Judge Childs from South Carolina, who didn't go to no Harvard.
Right. Where is she now? She was one of those, you know, remind me, there were three black women who Biden settled on, yes?
Yes.
And it was her, Childs, and who was the other sister?
Sits on the Supreme Court of California.
Okay. Yeah. So, my God. Oh, God. Has she made it? Oh, Jesus. I can't even wrap my head around it. Has he chosen her?
Well, your Senator Alex Padilla got a chance to speak yesterday, and he wasn't pissing and moaning because she wasn't chosen.
That part. Yeah, Padilla was actually on the View today, and I just wish, you know, God bless us, but Democrats, polite,
and we suck at and we stink on wheels at messaging.
Yes. Yes, Lord, this is the thing. It's like when you. Because I wish some, you know, Republican, you know, policy, you know, whoever, would change sides and say, look, y'all pitiful when it comes to this. Let me show you how to do it. Because they see a situation like the bullshit critical race theory. Or, you know, and they whip their base up into a frenzy on something that is just has nothing to do with nothing. It's on
something that doesn't exist.
That's something that doesn't fucking exist.
And yes, the author got a Pulitzer for the 1619 Project, and it was deserved. But anybody who had a working understanding of American history, this was not, hell, the 1619 Project was nothing. I mean, there was information I'd never read before, but the general thrust and meaning was not news to me or anybody else with a functioning understanding of American history.
That part.
You know, the only thing that I wish had been part of the 1619 Project, but it's not necessarily technically germane, is the fact that everybody, all the Europeans who landed here did not land on a vast, unpeopled wilderness.
Ah! Hello!
You know,
that makes me crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's real. And they know. But they know that the people whose pockets they pick and who they keep in a state of perpetual outrage don't know. Oh, by the way, Ron and Raleigh has Ron and Raleigh has a question for you.
Okay.
For you. What does Tracy think about Bill Maher saying he believes California will be going Republican because you can't do anything in California because of regulations and red tape?
Okay.
God, he's going to
shut my happy black ass.
Yeah. Bill Maher's eventually going to
come. For one thing.
Bill Maher's eventually going to show up on camera wearing a Nixon 72 button.
I mean, it's never okay. First of all, there's more Democrats here than Republicans for now. We don't have to worry about gerrymandering. You know, we don't have to so far. So the Republicans can't take control away from us. Thank God. So this bullshit about, I mean, look. When was the last time we had a Republican governor?
Arnold.
And the only reason, Arnold, thank you. And the only reason why he became governor is because of some a bullshit, you know, recall election.
Bullshit recall of
Gray Davis.
Gray Davis, right.
Because he wouldn't have won in the general. Would not have. That's why thank God. They're actually looking into, you know, this debacle and the money wasted through a damn pandemic. I mean, that money could have been used, I don't know, to help Californians. I don't know, pay their rent, pay their utility bills, you know, shit like that.
Pay off loans, student loans.
Pay off loans, help maybe pay for people to go back to school so they don't incur any more student loan debt. You know, little things like that. But and yet, we spent, I forget how much it was, but it was a shit ton of money. Absolute bullshit. Because Republicans hurt feelings. Like right now, what's going on in our, in the race, for the mayor of Los Angeles. Because Rick Caruso, that self-serving son of a bitch, you know, with his commercials, how he's going to clean up L.A. and woo-de-woo with, you know, all the stuff that he has, these plans that he has for the, I'm like, you know, Rick, buddy, if you were so concerned about the homeless and all this other stuff that's going on because of, and housing shortages and all that, you could have done that with just write a check. You don't have to be mayor to do all. If you really are that concerned, you know, but he's running as a Democrat. You know, he's only been a Democrat for about a month.
Oh, Jim Justice.
Because he wasn't. Right. And so he's running as a Democrat because he knows good and fucking God damn well that he would never win, would never be able to win in L.A. as a Republican. But what the problem is that, you know, a lot of these people, you know, we got, you know, Miss Gwyneth, you know, make a candle out of my, you know, from my vagina. Paltrow just endorsed his ass. So now we got
hopefully that's the kiss of death.
I hope and pray that because of, you know, that her endorsement will be like, and people will be like, oh, fuck no.
Let me do this. I'm going to bring Scott on into the conversation because he heard you on and wanted to get in on the conversation.
Okay.
Are you there, Scott?
Yo, Robin. Yo, Tracy.
Yo, yo.
I don't normally do this, but I've got my Miss Cleo fruit hat on, and I'm going to do my dial-up psychic deal and peer into my crystal crockpot because I've got a prediction.
Yes?
In the next round, one of these Republicans is going to try to claim the Judge Jackson's wedding cake on top of it was a miniature Catherine and Eldridge Cleaver before all this is over. you know? The,
yo.
They're throwing everything they can.
Isn't it true you had a new Black Panther's wedding cake?
Yeah, yeah. It's just and poor John Cornyn from Texas, that was he having strokes? Some guy, mini strokes, some guy walked up behind him, and I don't know whether he was calming him or whispering talking points. Did you see that?
No, I missed that.
Standing right up behind him and leaning down. And I thought of Roy Cohn, you know, back during the McCarthy era. It's pathetic. These are not even recycled talking points. It's like they're pulling every stupid ass thing that they've done for the last 35 years into the
Judge, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Black Panther Party?
And it doesn't diminish her. It diminishes them. That's the thing that they...
Well, it does to you. It does to me. It does to Tracy. It does to the Horn Family Community Congregation. But there is a significant, noisy, ugly, dumb, stupid plurality in America.
I'll bet you that if you... take a list of these hit pieces that these hit jobs that they're trying to do. I'll bet you there's a correlation with the viciousness and stupidity of each of these senators up there on the Republican side, and some of them are up for re-election. It wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, sure, sure, but you know that it's. Oh, where was I going to go with that? I mean, I know this stuff is triggering and ugly. I mean, Jude just said a minute ago, I couldn't bear watching, but I'm listening with our community. For some odd reason, I can almost envision a Stephen King movie with the ghouls that have taken on human form dripping copiously vile amounts of odorous spit out of their mouths as they manifest the strategy of divisiveness. It's overwhelming, emotional, and tragic all at the same time.
Tracy, have you been able to watch it without fucking gnawing on furniture?
Okay.
I imagine.
So here's what happened to me this morning. Now, let me tell you. I am fucking business this morning, okay? Driving, doing my thing, on my way to do my school run, you know, basking in the growth still of receiving, you know, applying for law school. Talk about 40 and quit. Applying for grad school and, you know, getting my cap and gown. Would have woke. And then this person, Robin Kincaid, asked me about this. And I said, no, I'm not listening. And I said, and then now I have to take some of the blame. I asked, well, how do you listen to it? Now that's my fault. I could have kept it saying, okay, well, you go ahead and take off with the scene, and I will listen to, you know, your analysis of it, you know, later on this afternoon. That's what I should have fucking did. But no. What do I do?
I'm a horrible person.
You just want to, you know, that the adage, misery loves company, fuck you, Robin, okay?
All we got in common is our misery. The least we can do is share it.
Again, fuck you. Okay? And I say that with as much love as I can muster. You, okay. See, this is how bad it is for me, Scott. I haven't had a piece of red velvet cake in almost three, 4 months, if not longer.
Oh, no.
I have to stop and get a piece of red velvet cake.
Yeah, cut me off a slice. You know, and I, you know, maybe that's okay, maybe I'm not your typical viewer, but I sit here watching because I didn't know anything about her really until the nomination was made. And I watch them. I mean, all of the nominees since they've been televising over the years, I watch just to educate myself, but also to find out the type of questions that are put to them, these various nominees. And I'm telling you, I thought...
Well, yeah, because you're... Wait a minute. You're old as fuck. So how many of these have you watched?
Oh God! I mean, I don't even remember the first time I watched. Well, I remember slapping.
Did Pontius Pilate have a confirmation hearing?
Did who?
That was brutal.
I didn't hear what she said.
I'm glad.
you were zinging me, weren't you, Tracy? You were sending a little zinger through the old Scotteroonie. But no, I'm serious.
It was a good one. It was brutal, but.
I will call you later for a replay. But no, I'm serious. It breaks my heart. I mean, it's hard enough to get the average person in this country to be aware and involved in the various processes of our government. Okay? But when you get them into the tent to watch and see how it works and watch history being made, it's like, this is why we don't have nice things in this country. I thought of you watching this horrendous treatment that this woman is being subjected to. And I'll tell you what, she's got more. I don't know whether she smoked something before she went in or what, but if I had been there, I'd be up in somebody's face. There'd be me calling people jive MFers all up and down the dais. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm a little overwrought.
I hope you didn't say jive because she's black. You didn't do that, right?
No. I said it because I was channeling my inner Bobby Seale or whatever. But what I'm... Here's another thing. Let me tell you this, and I'll go on record with this. If I ever get anal polyps, I'm going to name them Ted Cruz and
Tom Cotton, Josh Hawley, and Marsha Blackburn.
Tom Cotton.
Marsha. That woman needed to have her fucking mouth washed out and her brain, if she's got one, done on the low cycle.
The low spin cycle.
Delicate.
I've seen a lot of despicable fuckers. I'm sorry, Tracy.
You know what? Stop, baby. No. I was just... I had the misfortune to tune in when Miss Lindsay was talking. And fortunately for me, I only had audio because I was listening to it on C-SPAN radio on my phone. And I'm just sitting there listening, and I talked to Robin briefly during that time, and I said, there's only so much a black woman can hide on her face. You know, it gets to that point where she's like, my focal face. I'm not going to say what I'm feeling, but the look that I'm giving you, it says it all. Because she's looking at these fools like, are you just that obtuse? Are you just really that clueless? Are you just so patently out of the table and racist? But you don't even fucking care anymore. That you just want to, you don't even try to hide your shit. And this is what, this is the America of 2022. Because every time, you know, they were calling out about, you know, sentencing and, you know, and all this, the only thing I could think of was January motherfucking 6th. That peaceful protest that guy had, that, you know, they were taking a tour of the Capitol. Everybody pretty much got a slap on the wrist, you know, time served and all this. And, you know, I think about my own interactions with the criminal and justice system.
and being criminalized for being a poor black single mother who is now a convicted felon who got not, you know, who did her 5 years probation, did everything she could other than, you know, make full restitution. And that's because, I don't know, convicted felon bitches can't get a good job to pay your ass back. And then go to court on the day that I'm thinking that I'm going to be taking up, gave you 5 motherfucking years of my life. You know, fortunately, I never had to pee in the, you know, because thank God my offense wasn't a drug offense, because then I wouldn't have been able to get financial aid. But they have my DNA. They actually, because I was convicted of a felony, they were in the state of California, they have the right to take my DNA. So my DNA, it's somewhat, you know, it's on file. So if there's ever a crime, if I'm somewhere where a crime is committed and my DNA shows up, they can come for me. Even if I had nothing to do with it, but my DNA was there, therefore I was there. And then to go in front of the court and the court tells me, well, such and such, I want to get the transcript, but I got to find out how to transcript for that day. But there was a white girl ahead of me. She hadn't done shit for the appropriate kid. She barely reported, hadn't made restitution, had not finished her community service. And he let her off probation. So I'm thinking, hey, I'm good. Oh, but no. That asshole gave me 5 more years probation. That part. So 10 years. 10 fucking years of my life. No, and so when they come at her about sentencing, you know, mandatory sentencing and, you know, taking the judge, you know, the humanity out of making these sentences, that's where my blood really started boiling. Because when you make it a mandate, the person has to have this a mandated sentence. It lets people like the judge that I stood before do as much possible damage as he could. Whereas if you get a judge that has common decency and speaks, well, that I did not commit a crime, that I was being, you know, real motherfucking voted, then they could say, no, he doesn't need to get to that. Because here's what happened. When I did get sentenced the first time, and I went to, that was before a black woman, female judge, and they were looking at everything I had, she was looking at everything I had to do, like you know, 250 hours of community service and all that. And she's like, this woman has to work. How is she going to have time to, you know, do all this and take care of her child and do all this? And she was going to reduce my sentence, right? See, the things that, you know, even as hard as it is to relive everything that I went through, there's certain snatches of things that I remember. And I remember her saying that this is ridiculous. She shouldn't serve out this sentence. But the district attorney said it's mandatory.
Well, you know, there was something said about the Trump administration that is actually a truism about Republicans. And that is, the cruelty is the point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's who they are. And I have to wrap this up because we're significantly over time. And I'm trying to make sure that we get to keep uploading to Podbean all the way through the end of the month.
Well, just this quick note. I am troubled, continue to be troubled, that the people who think that everything is just fine with the system, just how it is, have never been caught up in it. And Tracy has been caught up in it. I, to a much lesser extent, with the advantage of being white, have been caught up in it. And that's the whole purpose of having Judge Jackson as a nominee and hopefully a new member, Associate Justice of the court. But anyway, I'm sorry, Robin. I had to throw that in.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And, you know, where Josh Hawley's concerned, even Bishop Willard Romney said of Josh Hawley's attack on Judge Brown,
it struck me that it was off course, meaning the attacks were off course that came from some, and there is no there. Of course, he won't call Hawley out by name.
You may as well not speak. If that is the extent to which your Mormon undies have gotten into a twist, if that's the best you can bring me, just shut the fuck up. Don't say any goddamn thing. I'm sorry.
It's a big deal. It's a big freaking deal. Because a Republican did something that was marginally the right thing to do.
Well, I wondered why pictures started falling off the wall in my house today. What time was it? Maybe it was at exactly the same time.
When the National Review, the home office of racism in America, says that Hawley failed the fact check, you're saying something.
Wow. Oh, that's huge. Now that's big.
And if you go to that New York cemetery, that fancy rich people cemetery up in New York State, and hear this whirring noise, that's the sound of William F. Buckley spinning.
Yeah, no shit. And you know, Darlene had a trenchant observation about why these remorseless, cynical, shameless attacks on a brilliant legal scholar and jurist. She said, it's an attempt to make KBJ out to be a worse person than Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Covid Barrett. That's the standard, because everybody in the country knows that those are a pair of shitbirds. You know, along with Slappy and along with Sammy Bad Breath and along with Ann's boy Neil and old Balls and Strikes.
Well, and I know you got to go, but that's what got me about Lindsay's performance today. How long ago were these previous nominees heard from and nominated and seated? 2 years, four years?
And that hissy we happened into was after Mazie Hirono was the recipient of the information to show all the Republican judges who are soft on pedophiles. And they didn't like that one little bit. Matt in San Francisco says, I'm changing my vocabulary. From now on, when a person deserves a bitch, please, I will respond with all due respect, Senator. That's a cowbell.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to roll out of here.
If you need to a shoulder to, I mean, a willing ear, you got my number, because I do want to talk to you, because I want to find out what your take on this bullshit is, because if I was mad, I imagine you're hopping mad.
Like you've heard me say it before, hotter than fish grease.
Yeah, there you go.
Fish grease is hot.
So it's like, you know, but we gotta let Robin go so she can handle her business.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck on the 405 North as per my usual this time of the evening. And I'm just, because I got to get my head right, because I got a shit ton of homework to do. And so
you have got to get your mind right.
I got to get
failure to communicate.
I got to straighten up and fly, right?
Otherwise, it's end of the box.
Yeah, Luke, your head's not right.
Yeah.
God, how does this shit happen? Y'all have a good night. Love you, dearly.
All right, take care, Robin. Take care, Tracy.
Good night,
Dante.
Talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye.
And so we wrap things up. This was a goose egg night, and it's understandable because we were dealing with the hearing. I guess tomorrow we will be at 1280. Only there may not be a program tomorrow. Please remember. Because I got to go down to Huntington, and I've got a dear friend who's in the hospital down there with stage 4 cancer. and I want to stop by and see him. And that may prevent me from being home in time for air. I hope you can understand. So it may be that the next time we talk will be Thursday. So any help with fundraising is vitally needed. I want to give the last word to Darlene on this, because, you know, we take it as a given when they say these things out loud that they want to overturn Griswold, and now Mike Brown wants to overturn Loving versus Virginia. But the question is, what comes next? Overturning Griswold. Darlene says, to what end, though? So that more white babies can start popping out all over the place? So white supremacy can regain a foothold in terms of sheer population numbers? Okay, then. That also means more babies of different ethnicities will also be popping out all over the place. So what's the end game here? Well, I can only assume more horrific consequences for the latter, you know, those people, to keep their population numbers down. This shit is coming from somewhere and someone. Well, some of it, Darlene, some of it is just straight up, plain old-fashioned fascist eugenics. But there's, you know, with anything that's Republican, there's always an economic aspect. But in this case, the culture war may take precedence over the economics. Understand that Griswold is certainly an attack primarily upon women. And it is a desire to get women out of the workforce. Republicans are tired of women complaining that if we can just get women out of the workforce, we can go back to scratching our ass and picking our nose with alternating hands and telling dirty jokes and not having to look which way, other way over our shoulders, wondering if somebody's going to say we're sexually harassing somebody, which means we can go back to sexually harassing people. And remember, there's an aspect of religion that drives this. It and without regard to consequence. A woman who is not in the workforce, who is trapped at home, has no access to reproductive care, no access to contraceptives. Well, that's what Jesus wants. And the devil take the hindmost. And he will. They say they want it. They're telling us out loud. The question is, it's kind of like Carl Malden and those old ads for American Express. What will you do? What will you do? Well, we've been here before. Vote like your life depends upon it. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room earlier. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Remember, the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is Head on .live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Now a union shop, and proudly so. Please stay safe. You know the drill. All three shots, be part of the 29%. KN95 masks, hand washing, soap and water, hand sanitizer, carry some with you. Social distance. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you burbling about Fentanyl kingpins! Avoid that bobble-throated goon like the plague. Because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.